Broadcasting high atop the Ronald Reagan Building in New York, the capital of talk radio. It's The Right Perspective. The Right Perspective. With John from Staten Island. Talk Radio's one-man SWAT team. And Frank from Queens. The man that Bill Clinton calls the most dangerous caller in talk radio. Now, it's a liberal's worst nightmare. It's The Right Perspective.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Welcome to The Right Perspective. It's Friday, September 19th, 2008. And Lord knows we've got a lot to talk about tonight with what's been going on around the globe, actually. It's not just New York, and it's not just Wall Street. It's everywhere, and we're getting hit from all sides. And it should be a lot of fun. We've got Cheryl of New Jersey with us tonight.
Good evening.
Frank is on the line already. He's called in. He's back in the States.
Hello, Frank.
And we're gonna bring him up in a second. We want to thank Cheryl for coming down at the last minute. We gave her kind of a short notice, but she made it. She's going to hang around till about 12 o'clock. And the news guy will be joining us for the next hour or whenever we go off the air tonight. And he's welcome to jump in at any moment. And thank God for the news guy and our friends like Cheryl who jump in there at the last minute and help out with the show. Really appreciate that. Frank is on the line. We're going to bring him up. And here we go. Throw the switch. Hey, Frank.
Hello, Frank.
How you feeling? How are you feeling?
Fine.
There you go. We needed higher audio. There you go. Okay, Frank, go to it. Yeah. Good to hear your voice. We missed you last week.
Oh, thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for stepping in.
My pleasure. Last week
I was in Quebec where I made a spiritual journey, and I'll be speaking about it more in depth next week. But to me, after seeing the place where our Salutrian ancestors... And I went there specifically for that because I was going up and down the Saint Lawrence, down by Rive de Loup and Saint Simeon and these little towns over there in Quebec. And I have to tell you, there's no doubt as I went there that the Salutrian ancestors of ours came through the mouth of the Saint Lawrence. And next week, I'm going to expound upon that because as far as I'm concerned now, there's no Canada, there's no United States, there's no Mexico, there's only Great Salutria. This continent is Great Salutria, where our white Caucasian Salutrian ancestors came 30,000 years ago. And it was a spiritual adventure, a trek to go to the same places that I know that they came 30,000 years ago. But I got to tell you, Quebec is a true, and I spoke to Judge Ronald. Unfortunately, I couldn't get over there to see him this time. I'm going to be going, and I'll explain that next week, what the problem was. But I'll be seeing him probably in a couple of months. I'm going to go up there specifically for that. But Quebec will be parts outside of Montreal and Quebec City are truly a great white homeland. It's a wonderful, wonderful place, and the Quebecois are a wonderful people. Once you get to know them, they're a wonderful people, and it is truly a great white homeland. And, up there, I really didn't have much of a chance to watch too much television. Couldn't get any English newspapers, but when I could get to see some TV, this vile mulatto and the scum, the left-wing scum that supports him, I'm telling you, I have a great fear. My fear for this country is tenfold now, seeing the depths of depravity that they've fallen into, hacking into the email of Sarah Palin. How loathsome, how vile, how despicable, how degenerative they are in their hatred. Or I was reading when John McCain, and I missed it, when he went on The View with those four... I mean, why would a man of his stature and his wife decide to lower themselves by going on a program that is so politically prejudiced against them? John McCain's wife, and I'm no John McCain fan. I'm not voting for him. I'm voting against this mulatto. That's the whole idea. But how could he and his wife go on a program like that? McCain's wife said they picked our bones clean. And that's what they were, like a bunch of vultures. They've got to stop going on these kinds of programs, especially programs like this, where they're so blatantly prejudiced. Now, The View is going to have Bill Clinton next week, and I guarantee you they'll be slavering over him.
Yeah.
They'll be slavering. They'll be fawning over him, groveling over him. And so John McCain goes on a program. He can't get anything fair on a program like that. And, you know, you want to talk about the lowest of the low. You know, we've been saying on The Right Perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, for how many years about Charles Rangel?
Yep.
How many years do we tell the American people about this low-life, crooked bastard? And that's what he is. He's a low-life, crooked bastard.
Yeah.
Biden says it's patriotic to pay taxes. Well, what about all the taxes that this pork, that this pot-bellied sharecropper with the pomaded hair that's in charge of the Ways and Means Committee? How many taxes did he not pay? He's a cheat. He's nothing more than a low-life cheat from Harlem. Street garbage. It comes out now he had a parking space in Congress, in the garage there, worth $290 a month. He's using it for free to park, I think it was his Cadillac. You know, he may hate white people, but he sure likes them white cars. He's got his big-ass Cadillac down there that he pulled, whatever it is that he's got, that he's been parking for free. And he's not been paying taxes on the $290 a month that he's supposed to be paying for it. Four rent-controlled apartments in New York City because he's nothing more than a goddamn Tom. He's a Tom for that real estate agency that he cozies up to. And he's a crook, nothing more than a cheap crook, not paying taxes on his villas down in the Caribbean. So what is? How come Joe Biden didn't come out and say, Charlie Rangel isn't patriotic, he doesn't pay more taxes?
Yeah,
and you know,
right,
John, this is what we said. You know, when he makes, whenever you see him on TV, and he's done it time and always, Charles Rangel makes that snide, sarcastic remark, and then he turns and smiles at the camera. Well, now he's got to get the black smacked off of his face. These Republicans got to get some guts and get up in Congress and begin a filibuster and demand that he step down, and they shouldn't stop until this bum crook is kicked out as the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. What an atrocity. We think that they're vacuuming our pockets with taxes, and this bum is in charge of our money.
Right.
He can spend our money. Think of the irony of this. Charles Rangel can proportion out our money in Congress, but this cheap son of a bitch makes sure that he doesn't spend a red cent of his own money. Now that's the height of hypocrisy, and these Republicans better get on it, and anybody in any party, it doesn't really matter, because this is not so much a partisan issue. Now what we have now is an issue of right and wrong. A man with tremendous power who's nothing more than a cheap two-bit tax dodger. We're allowing, you realize that? Tax dodger to be chairman of the most powerful committee in Congress, the Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah.
And they're letting him get away, literally, with picking the pockets of the people. So when Joe Biden makes one of his insane and bizarre remarks that it's patriotic to pay more taxes, let him start with that fat pomaded sharecropper who got the purple heart by bending over to shine a general's shoes when he was in Korea. Let him talk about him, not about anybody else. Let them get that straight. But that shows you the massive corruption that's in Congress, because they are given whatever they want. They're given every kind of perk imaginable, and they're just allowed access to too much money, and it's never their money. You notice that when it's their money, they're all tight-fisted.
Sure.
But when it's our money, they don't care how they spend it. It's like I once took this girl out on a date, and she said to me, "Oh, you're lucky I'm a cheap date." Now, you know, I really know what to say. And when I spoke to a friend of mine, he says, "Well, Frank, anything you're not paying for is cheap." And that's the idea. They could throw our money around like it's nothing, but when it comes to a bum, a grubber, a gruzler, a leech like Charlie Rango, well, he throws nickels around as if they were manhole covers. That's the difference, and that's what's got to be really cleaned up. And we can't have any more lectures by Biden on raising our taxes, but that's the danger. If the mulatto and these ilk get in, because they will ruin the economy. And you know, think about it. I don't know. I got to see some CNN program this week as I was going through my spiritual journey through the Salutrian homeland. And here they are. They were talking about the collapse of the economy, the collapse of Wall Street. What should you do with your money? Should you take it out of the bank and put it under the mattress? Is your money really safe? I mean, they're going through this, and they're pounding out this thing. Wall Street is going to collapse. The economy is on the verge of collapse. Your money isn't safe. If you're buying stock, if you're a kid in your 20s, it's fine. But anything older, wait 20 of the, you know, it won't help because the time has passed you. They are doing every negativity, and that comes to a point. It reflects something. It reflects the, first of all, the negativity that comes out of the media, the sensationalism that comes out of the media that ignores other factors in the economy, and it shows you how you can't prognosticate, how the fearmongers, the scandalmongers are so rife in the media. And this parallel happened during the Great Depression. I am almost finished with one of the best books I've read in years, and it's called The Forsaken, An American Tragedy in Stalin's Russia. What an incredible book about Americans who, at the height of the Great Depression, you know, they couldn't get jobs, they lost almost everything. And they were so propagandized that they actually believed, now get this, that the Soviet entity, the Bolshevik experiment, was the future of mankind. And so they weren't both, some were Reds, but most were just regular working people who couldn't get a job, who were at their wits' end, and thought by going to live in the Bolshevik experiment that they could build a new socialism. They could help build socialism. Everybody's going to be, I mean, you got to believe that. Listen to the crap.
A utopia.
These people believed in. Everybody's going to be paid the same. There's no bosses. We all own the industry. All of the cliches. So they went there. What happened to them was they just were sucked up into the Soviet Holocaust of Joseph Stalin, of which some 25 to 30 million people perished during the Great Terror. And some of them, those who survived, were just put in Stalin's work camps to die. The ones that eventually did survive and were released, some were in those camps from the 1930s into the 1950s. But the present point here is this. they didn't know, since they were in the Bolshevik experiment, that the American economy boomed, it rebounded, and America had, its economy had a golden age. So they had no idea that they were dead wrong in their disbelief in the American economic system and the future of America. They thought that because it was that way at that time, that it was going to be this way. And that was because of the negativity that was put out by the media, the propaganda. Now, I could see how we have exactly that with the MSNBC, CNN, all of them, the constant cacophony of negativism, collapse. This country, first of all, this country's economy, no matter what, is too, its basics are too strong. You know, it's like Jimmy Carter. He undersold this country. He was ready, that traitorous son of a bitch, to haul down the stars and stripes and put up the hammer and sickle. He was ready to wave the white flag and say, Mr. Brezhnev, we surrender. He underestimated this country. And I'm tired of a media that is so negative and that is just doing this out of one reason. They want to portray the Bush administration as a total failure. They want to portray the American economic system as a failure because they want this left-wing mulatto in office. And that's what they've been doing, and that's what they want. And we've got to realize that when we watch them with these reports.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Frank, it's really amazing. This thing with Charles Rangel, and we're going to get into Wall Street and a little bit, folks, and all the other stuff, and Frank is willing. Frank is welcome, of course, to stay on the line and take part in some of the discussion. But he said, I don't know if you heard it, by the way, he called us Sarah Palin. He said that she was psychologically unbalanced. You know, this guy, you notice this guy is always attacking one's mental condition. He said of Newt Gingrich one time for trying. He says he criticized, when Newt Gingrich criticized Bill Clinton for trying to obstruct justice, Charles Rangel said on Crossfire, quote, that's what happens when you don't take your medicine, unquote. Remember that, Frank?
Yeah.
And he said that, also, now he's saying that Sarah Palin is mentally unbalanced. Well, here's a guy who's been a crook, Frank, and it goes way back. People don't realize how far it goes back. Get this. When he was the head, he was at the heart of the Harlem Urban Development Corporation, or HUDC. He was forced to resign from that board of HUDC, which was scandal-scarred from the day it was created in 1973. Here's a quote from the report. Tens of millions in taxpayer dollars passed through the agency over two decades without creating any significant economic development. Many of the board members used the money to support lavish lifestyles and the agency. The HUDC agency also never reported its records of transactions over to the IRS. Legal fees ballooned and penny ante chiseling was rampant to the tune of $100 million over 23 years. This guy's been a crook for 35 years. And he's now the head of the House and Ways Committee that's going to write the tax laws that takes more of your money. And Joe Biden, who wants to take more of your money, gave a lousy $300, $300-something to charity last year.
And you know, speaking of Biden, this guy makes between $200,000 and $300,000 a year, but he's got a house that's worth well over $1 million. How much money has he been hiding that he can buy a house like that? He's another cheap, grubby bastard that's in Congress. He talks about how I took Amtrak home every night to Delaware to see. You lying piece of sack of crap. Amtrak is subsidized by the public. This is another one that leached off. I'm sick of these leeches. I'm telling you now, paid them one salary, and everything they get comes out of that salary.
Right, right.
And I am totally and completely against the government propping up propping up AIG. I am totally against that. That's our money. Let the market work. I'm a free marketeer. Let the market work. They brought this on. Now they're going to have to pay for it themselves. Well, let the market work.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous. You know what? I'm going to go out now, and I'm going to buy a new car. And then I'm going to demand that the government bail me out and pay my car loan.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, they're going to, the government is going to buy up these mortgages, right?
Right.
Those mortgages were bundled and sold 15, 20 times. This isn't a matter of just people who reneged on it. They did this, they got these people bought it. Then the securities companies and these big investment companies sold them over and over and over. And people were making money on it. This is one of the biggest scams ever perpetrated.
Yeah.
When you have morons who took out adjustable rate mortgages on houses that they couldn't possibly afford, and they bought the myth that, well, don't worry, when the mortgage readjusts, the house will be worth another $200,000 in this market, and you can just get another mortgage based on that. And they sold. We were a nation. This is a nation, like I said, there's political alcoholism, and now this is a nation that's on political, that's on economic alcoholism. This is a nation that people have got to go into withdrawal. They've got to go into a 12-step. They've been living way beyond their means. Everything is on a credit card. And I'll be damned if I'm going to bail out AIG that brought this on. This is an outrage. Because you know what? Now I'll buy a house, and I'll turn around. I won't say I want the government to bail me out. I'm sick and tired of bailouts. It's coming out of the pockets of the public.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about repayment. They brought this on. It's not up for the people of this country to cover the tracks of a bunch of bums who are out to make a buck at our expense.
Yeah, well, there's good things and bad things about the AIG thing. The government is getting a company where they're going to own 80% of it, and they'll resell a lot of that stuff and get a lot of that money back. But the other one, company that was bailed out, that I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, but you know, John, what this means is the government is nationalizing a company.
Yeah,
right.
And I don't believe in, maybe that bum scumbag down in Cuba can nationalize, and maybe this piece of garbage in Venezuela can nationalize. The fact is, the United States of America does not nationalize companies. And that's a very dangerous trend now, because they're going to start bailing out and bailing out and bailing out. And as you know, John, whenever the government takes over anything, they ruin it.
Well, let's
and
hope they
not
can.
Not up to us to pay for it.
Let's hope they can sell whatever they get off as fast as possible.
Now, what if they can't sell it? What if they can't sell it? Or what if they sell it and we take the loss? In other words, now that if they buy 80% of it, no matter what happens, we're taking the loss.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. We don't want nationalization in this country. And before I go, maybe I'll call you back in the second hour, because I don't want to eat up Cheryl's valuable time. The world is waiting. The world is waiting to hear Cheryl.
Well, I know you must. You must feel like all wound up, you know, with a lot that's been going on. You haven't been able to. You know.
Wait till
by
next
the
week.
We have a question from Uncle Warren. I don't know if you heard about this, Frank, but Uncle Warren asked Frank what he thinks of that female CBC Canadian reporter who viciously attacked Sarah Palin. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
She called him a dress. She called her a dress down porno queen or something like that, and some other remarks.
Let me tell you something. I watched CBC while I was on my spiritual journey to Great Salutria, and CBC, it's insane. In fact, I called the judge and I spoke to the judge, and I said, you know, Judge, here I am in Great Salutria by the mouth of the St. Lawrence, where our white Caucasian ancestors first sailed in, and I'm telling you, it's like a white homeland. It's magnificent. You don't look over your shoulder. You don't have people driving around blasting cars to look. It's really a great white homeland.
Right. People
and,
said,
and yet you got to get this. Every program you see on Canadian television, it's always blacks. I said, I didn't know there were that many in Canada.
Yeah.
The CBC. When you watch their commentary, it is so biased against the Republicans, against McCain, Sarah Palin. It's incredible what a piece of left-wing garbage the CBC is.
It's just like the BBC.
And, oh, yeah. And now, before I go.
Here's another, before you go, Frank, here's another one. That Canadian reporter isn't the only one. Our good old friend Sarah Bernhardt is at it again.
Oh, that douchebag.
You know what she said? She said, Sarah Palin better not come to New York because she'll be gang raped by her black male friends.
You see, that's...
Can you imagine this?
That is a piece of crap trying to keep... Who is Sarah Bernhardt?
I know.
She's a skinny, ugly, disgusting... I don't know if you know her. Have you seen her?
Oh, yeah,
A vile, disgusting... When I looked up the word skank and skeeve in the dictionary, under schifoso, it said Sarah Bernhardt. This broad, so she's another one. She's just dying for publicity. She'll do anything.
Yeah.
But next week, I want, and before I go, I just want to say, I had heard when I was up there that Kim Jong-il is actually ill. Now, hopefully...
Yes.
Yeah, he'll finally become a good red. But I want to say this. And here's something people don't realize. Every communist dictator in the post-war world modeled themselves after Stalin. Do you know how crazy Stalin was? Now, people don't know this. I read this in this book. Listen how crazy this is. They had, after the war, he had a 50-foot-high bronze statue of himself made, you know, because it was really a religion, like just the way they worshiped Kim Il-sung. Well, what happened was they didn't want birds, you know, to land and crap on the head of the great leader. You know what? They electrified the head.
Oh.
They ran electric wires. So when birds would land on Stalin's head, the birds would croak. Now, think about it. Kim Jong-il, Tito, Ceausescu, Castro, every one of these people modeled themselves after Stalin. And Stalin was the worst mass murderer in European history. I mean, the book is very enlightening, but the point is this. Not one of these people, there's never been anybody who ever modeled themselves after Hitler. They all you know, you'll always have like these people like Mosby or these people, you know, he was in Britain, you know, they'll have fringe groups. But just think of it, how many groups model themselves after Stalin. And Kim Jong-il is just like his old man. And hopefully, I'm praying every night that he will finally become soon, and we'll celebrate it on the right perspective, a good red. And to the shortwave audience, we will continue Ramadama-ding-dong next week. Thank you. I'll talk to you later.
John. All right, Frank, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Frank.
And
a great opening.
Great opening. That was the great Frank of Queens. He'll be back next week. And, you know, it's I didn't want to hold him up any longer. We're going to be going to a break in about 30 seconds. But Frank would have loved to have heard this many times, Cheryl and folks. You've heard us say on this show that eventually conservatism ends up being vindicated for what we... It may take 30 years sometimes. You've heard me say that a lot of times. Well, when we come back, I'm going to read a short story that shows that this time it was over 50 years, but we ended up being vindicated. Wait till you hear this. 1-718-761-9996. When we come back, we'll have a few remarks from Cheryl. And then we'll start to take your phone calls at 1-718-761-9996.
Is a runaway beer truck careening downhill out of control. Cannot be stopped, will not be stopped.
John and Frank.
The right perspective.
Go into the garden. It's not good for a son of Pharaoh to see his father humbled by...
John and Frank!
The Go-Go's. Very good group. Well, they didn't get enough credit. Go-Go's were an excellent group. And we're going to get to that story about what happened in, or the vindication for we conservatives who are always called red baiters and, you know, paranoid about communists under your bed. Oh, yeah, wait till you hear this. Cheryl, did you want to say a couple of things before I get into this?
No, go right ahead. I think everybody's anxious to hear. Yeah. Oh, okay, yes. What I wanted to say, what I was looking to say, was that the Obama team, the abominable team, is looking to hit on Rush Limbaugh. They have come out with an advertisement in Spanish that they're putting only in certain states because in those Spanish-speaking states, you know, they're American states, but they have a very big Spanish population. They're having Rush Limbaugh with all Spanish words behind him saying that get these Spanish out of here, shut your mouths and get out. And the problem that the Obama team, the abominable team, is going to run into is Rush Limbaugh, when John McCain first got the nomination, Rush Limbaugh was not excited. He was disappointed. He felt that the whole Republican Party had let him down. This was the nominee. The only time that Rush Limbaugh got excited about the ticket was when Sarah Palin came on the ticket. And that's when he got all juiced up and was excited on the program. And he just went right to it. And he really was at his best. They are so stupid to look to take on Rush Limbaugh and to make fun of him and to ridicule him and to make up these ads in Spanish for just a few states. They started in with the wrong party. They are looking to control the television airwaves with this stupid show, The View, that Frank is saying, how can you even go on The View with these yachnas and yentas over there just pulling you apart?
Yeah, and they had a contrast as to how when Obama was on the show, oh, they were telling him about how sexy he was and everything, and then Barbara Walters wouldn't even look John McCain in the eye when she asked him a question. You know, that's a contempt tactic. And that's what it came off as. And they showed it back to back, and you could really see the difference. And yet you hear so many people today trying to deny that the media is biased. Well, we know better. And now the world knows better, because you can't get away with that stuff. There's too much video. There's too much audio around on the internet and everywhere else. And the left
internet,
is being exposed.
You bet. The internet is going to get them this time.
Well, we're going to get to Ron from Ardmore in a couple of minutes, but here's that story, folks, about why, once again, we conservatives were vindicated. You know how they used to, during the McCarthy era, when we said there was widespread communist conspiracy in this country, and they would call us red baiters, and I wasn't around then, but the thing is, they said we were paranoid about communists. Al Gore said that, by the way. And so did Jimmy Carter. Well, this editorial that was in the Post the other day is very enlightening, and once again, it shows that we were right. And the name of the editorial is History Speaks, and it says the following. So the red baiters and the witch hunters were right after all. For more than half a century, it's been an article of faith among progressives, in quotes, that Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were framed for their political beliefs and executed in 1953 as Soviet spies. But now, the Rosenberg's 91-year-old co-defendant, Morton Sobel, has confessed all to the New York Times.
It's a good thing he didn't wait too long.
Yeah. He says, yeah, that he says the Rosenbergs were devout communists. And yes, he and Julius Rosenberg did pass atomic secrets to Moscow. Of course, Sobel, who served 19 years adds his own little twist to the story. He never thought of it as espionage, he says, because the secrets he stole were strictly defensive. And there's a big difference between giving that and stuff that could be used to attack our country. Yeah, right. And he insists that something that's defensive can always turn into an offensive weapon. And he insists that Ethel Rosenberg, while aware of her husband's espionage, was guilty only of, quote, being Julius's wife, unquote. But even if Sobel's contentions were all true, he and his co-defendants were legally culpable of the crime with which they were charged and convicted. Conspiracy to commit espionage. So this much is now clear from Morton Sobel's belated confession. The verdict of history agrees completely with that of the court. Guilty, guilty, guilty. So congratulations, conservatives. Once again, you and I and Cheryl and Frank and everybody else who knows what's going on and knows what communists and communist sympathizers are all about and know that we have our own domestic enemy still here in the United States. And today it's known as the Democrat Party, by the way. They're around, and we can spot a skunk and smell them when we see it. And let's go to Ron and Ardmore and see what he's got to say.
Here we go.
Hi, Ronnie.
Hello, Ron.
Hello, Cheryl.
Yes.
Ron, and hopefully Frank is listening.
I bet he is.
On the shortwave, yep.
And as usual, when you call in to talk radio and you have something to talk about and somebody chimes in, something different, your mind wanders and goes, the Communist Party, William Ayers.
Right.
Barack Obama's main guy, or one of his main guys.
Best friends.
Okay. Bailout. AIG, the socialization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It's around you, but I think our education system has dumbed down the populace so much that they don't realize that, the government's taken over this stuff.
Yeah.
I want to know, with all the guys who were in charge, with all these big-time companies raking in millions of dollars that they called salary, and they all went to these fancy-schmancy schools, how come all of these people came up with all of these ideas that culminated this week at this point of time? What did they learn in school that taught them how to be top-notch thieves? Because that's all they did. They stole from the companies. They didn't care about the company doing well, and the auditors don't see anything. The legislators don't see anything. Chucky Schmucky in the Senate over there with all of his committees that he sits on, the banking committee. So you look in the banks. You look in the banks. You have all the data there in front of you. If you're the government and it's brought before you and you're such a well-educated person, what are you looking at? If you don't see it, if you don't know what's right there in front of you.
Yeah, but, John McCain's going around the country just repeating a lot of the propaganda of the left. The greed on what it's not. The problem isn't Wall Street and greed as much as it is as this pandering that was done in the 1990s.
You're killing me, John. That's my point. Go ahead.
To give people who didn't belong having loans, get the loans. Because that's all the Clinton regime was all about. Clinton never did anything. And the people who worked underneath him, they never did anything that was good for the country. They always did things that were good just to gain momentary political gain. He was never interested in the long-term welfare of this nation. And it really started there. I don't want to hear McCain talking about the greed on Wall Street. Greed, as it says in that movie, Wall Street, Michael Douglas was right. Greed is good to a certain extent because it makes people strive to become successful.
Exactly.
And the other people down the line, if you're successful, then other people are successful. Because the more that wealthy people are successful, the more people they need to hire to do the job, and the more they pay in taxes. Now, we're not talking about – it's fine to be greedy – and make money as long as you're doing it legally. Now, there was some shenanigans that went on in Wall Street with these CEOs because they thought that if anything ever happened, the government would bail them out. And to a certain extent, it looks like that's what happened. But, you know, you have a I want to play this this caller to the Rush Limbaugh show. And then I'm going to play a remark by Robert Reich, who was Bill Clinton's labor secretary, who was not in his administration at the time a lot of this stuff started to go down. But this was a caller to Rush's show. And this shows that the problem started with Clinton and his administration.
Yeah, can you give a timeline about what time? In 96, 95, 94?
This is about 19. This all really started in the Carter administration. He was at fault too, and then it really started to get rolling in 1995.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but here was a caller to the Rush Limbaugh program because he's as outraged as I am that Barack Obama and the Democrats are trying to blame this on the Republicans and George Bush and John McCain, who were the only ones who were saying we've got to do something before this blows up in our face. Okay. And I've got documentation to that that I'm going to read in a little bit while. But here's the caller to Rush today.
What that did was allow commercial and investment banks to consolidate. Now, banks began trading and underwriting assets called mortgage-backed securities, CDOs, and SIVs. All of the toxic waste that's coming home to roost today. That was after a one-year $200 million lobbying effort by the Democrat lobbyists to put this thing through, and it was done in opposition to the Congressional Research Service's own report. The information is out there. All anyone has to do is go do a web search for Glass-Steagall and repeal. It is unbelievable that the Democrat Party is trying to lay this at the foot of the Republican Party when it was Bill Clinton and Democrat lobbyists that pushed this thing through. And the Congressional Research Service said this: depository institutions are supposed to be managed to limit risk. Their managers thus may not be conditioned to operate prudently in more speculative securities businesses. This is a problem that was caused by Democrat lobbyists and a Democrat president, and these are the historical facts.
That's right on.
Yeah, let me put my volume up here. Yeah. And then Robert Reich was a guest. He was a guest. Let's see.
I could give you guys a timeline of my personal timeline of all this stuff.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's about when I bought my house. But if you got Robert Reich lined up. We'll listen to that, and this is exactly what I'm calling in on.
He was a guest on MSNBC, and this is what he said.
In the latter years of the Clinton administration, when I was not there any longer, I should add, there was an attempt by Alan Greenspan and Bob Rubin and a few others to deregulate financial markets. And they did. They split commercial banking off from investment banking. And many people will say, well, that was the beginning of the problem. And then, of course, in 2003, 2004, Alan Greenspan reduced short-term interest rates to the point where, you know, every single bank wanted to lend money. I mean, if you could stand up straight, you could get a bank loan because there was so much pressure to get that money out the door. Money was so cheap. So, yes, there is some responsibility on Democrats, some responsibility on Alan Greenspan and the Fed.
So he more or less lays the blame that it started in the Clinton regime and really goes back to the Carter regime. But
I can pinpoint it pretty much to the Clinton regime.
And starting when?
Starting when? Well, Cheryl, in 1991, I purchased the house I'm living in today. I had to have 20% down, 15 or 20% down. It was a nice chunk of change. I went through we're on radio now. I went through an anal cavity search for 3 months on all my credit, my past employers, my present employer, I purchased the house in February. I didn't move in till May because that's when everything was approved. Now, granted, today computers may speed up this process.
Okay, they do.
I moved into my home in May of 1991, I had about $0.07 in my pocket. I had to borrow money off my parents to buy pizza and beer for the guys that helped me move my bed, my TV, my bureau drawer. I had a couch and a couple other things in here. I moved into an empty shell of a home. I was given a choice of an ARM or lock-in. I believe it was 7% at the time. I did not go to high school, or I did not go to college. I barely made it out of high school, but I stayed away from that ARM, that adjustable rate mortgage, because even though they may go down, it may also go up. I'd rather know what I had to do each month for 30 years.
Yeah. Yep.
During that time, I remember being that I was on such a low budget, I really didn't have much money, but I did pay for a cable bill, and I had a refrigerator and some hot dogs, and I, you know, have some people over, basic cable, and I would have C-SPAN on, and I believe it was 91, they had the Million Man March by Louis Farrakhan. Louis Farrakhan was a successful march, very good, congratulations. Not to be outdone by Louis Farrakhan, I think it was 92 or 93, and we don't hear this, Jesse Jackson had a Million Mortgage March. You guys, you guys remember this, right?
Yeah, because they were always complaining about a so-called redlining.
Redlining,
yeah.
From the
right,
banker.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the bankers would look at that top of the resume and see African-American and throw it in the trash.
That's right. Yeah, and they claimed that when they saw a black face applying for a loan, they would just throw it away. And that wasn't the case.
If you had good credit, you got the loan.
If you didn't, too bad.
The banker don't care where he's making his money.
Well, this is why it's a farce when you hear a lot of black troublemakers say that blacks just want to be treated like anyone else. But they don't. They want special treatment all the time because they can't live up to the standards in many cases. So they started this. They told a lot of these lending institutions. In fact, they gave them quotas.
Demanded.
They gave them quotas,
demanded.
Ron.
That's
and
right.
When they weren't reaching the quotas,
remember,
they
I
closed
remember.
Their eyes and gave them the loan anyway, and that's what happened. To quote somebody, it's chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah, well, that's what we have today, because I remember seeing what they were asking for.
That was about...
And they all had the rim. They had money for the rims on the car. They had money to go to Red Lobster on Friday night. They had money for the CDs, the boom boxes, the $100 and $200 athlete jerseys. But yet when it came down to have money for a down payment, oh, the bankers are being racist. That infuriated me.
And
but
that was
gradually
yeah.
trickled on.
That was
and,
94, about 94,
yeah, actually,
because
yeah,
by 96, Clinton put through that Housing Act, the Housing Act of 96, and that was all to give to people who didn't have a home,
no
the homeless,
home,
the poor. Right.
No pay income verification. You heard those lines.
You didn't need income. You didn't even need a job, and on top of that, there were even more lies and on the form, and they were just absolutely giving it away. It went from one extreme to the other.
Over the last 10 years, I could move into a house. It thought it crossed my mind and my wife's mind. We could move into a house that we could really push the limits, and hey, good times are going to roll. Good thing me and my wife didn't make that, but we're damn close. But still, this is where it started, is when we loosened the standards because a party pandered, a Democratic Party pandered to a special interest group that like I said, need I say more, and now the head of this Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and I forget, I think it's Jim Johnson who was in front of Freddie Mac and Franklin Raines, who's the front
man
for Fannie Mae. These are Obama's economic advisors. These guys walked away with millions of dollars.
Well, here's
here's what I in a soundbite. Here's what I say. I repair cars for a living. If I repaired cars the way these people ran companies, I know I'd be out in the street homeless.
Yeah, I know. It's, by the way, speaking of Obama and Fannie Mae, this was another commentator implicating Obama and what a fraud he was with the with all of this mess. And now he's out there accusing John McCain and the Republicans of trying to blame them for this.
Lehman Brothers' collapse is traced back to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the two big mortgage banks that got a federal bailout a few weeks ago. Freddie and Fannie used huge lobbying budgets and political contributions to keep regulators off their backs. A group called the Center for Responsive Politics keeps track of which politicians get Fannie and Freddie political contributions. The top three U.S. senators getting big Fannie and Freddie political bucks were Democrats. And number two is Senator Barack Obama. Now remember, he's only been in the Senate 4 years, but still managed to grab the number two spot ahead of John Kerry, decades in the Senate, and Chris Dodd, who's chairman of the Senate Banking Committee. Fannie and Freddie have been creations of the congressional Democrats and the Clinton White House, designed to make mortgages available to more people, and as it turned out, some people who couldn't afford them. Fannie and Freddie have also been places for big Washington Democrats to go to work in the semi-private sector and pocket millions. The Clinton administration's White House budget director, Franklin Raines, ran Fannie and collected $50 million. Jamie Gorelick, Clinton Justice Department official, worked for Fannie and took home $26 million. Big Democrat Jim Johnson, recently on Obama's VP search committee, has hauled in millions from his Fannie Mae CEO job. Now remember, Obama's ads and stump speeches attack McCain and Republican policies for the current financial turmoil. It is demonstrably not Republican policy, and worse, it appears the man attacking McCain, Senator Obama, was at the head of the line when the piggies lined up at the Fannie and Freddie trough for campaign bucks. Senator Barack Obama, number two on the Fannie-Freddie list of favored politicians after just 4 short years in the Senate.
Yeah. Now, Ron, before you comment, we've got Beth, Mike of Bethpage, Long Island, on the line, and he disagrees with me. He's a Mike likes to bash Republicans a lot for some reason, and we're going to bring him up. But
I like bashing Democrats.
Yeah, well, no, but the reason I played this is because this shows that the Democrats used Fannie and Freddie Mae for their own benefit. They took all the money out of Freddie and Fannie Mae for their own stupid political careers. And to support their political careers, and that's where the money went. These stinking Democrats.
Remembers the Million Mortgage March, first of all. That's all.
Yeah.
How wise this man is. Bring him on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll bring him on later. I
want to. You want me to hang up?
No.
You know, if you got something else to say, just say it quickly, because we want to get to Steve of Wisconsin. He's been waiting, and then we want to get to Mike. But the thing is, Mike is
chicken.
Well, no, he wants to blame the Republicans too, but
it was the policy that broke the door open was this Million Mortgage March that isn't this a shame? We should loosen the standards. And like I said, I'm sitting at home, and that's how I became interested in talk radio, John. Because when I first bought this house, I had nothing. I was paying the bills and doing everything, and I my entertainment was radio, and I listened to the radio, and hey, what the hell? I paid my phone bill, my cable bill, and radio was free, and I'd call in on these shows.
Well, the bottom line is, Ron, is that liberalism and political correctness were the problem, and the only Republicans, if they were involved at all, were liberals. Liberalism is the poison. And political correctness is the poison. And there's some of it in the Democrat, in the Republican Party as well. And they should be thrown out on their ears like this Olympia Snow and Lincoln Chafee.
Spector was all happy.
They helped the Democrats a lot of times.
I'll go with that. And he's that limp-wristed, whale in the pants, goddamn, the rhino Republican. But I bring this guy on because I'm sure he would not bash one Democrat. Willie, I'll bash Republicans.
We're gonna bring up Steve. Be patient with us. We'll get to you.
I'll hit the road. Thank you, guys.
Don't go yet. We're gonna bring Mike up, and we'll see what he has. Yeah, Mike.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, Cheryl. Hi, John.
Steve. We'll be with you shortly.
Ron, who's been insulting me without even knowing me or even understanding.
Well, no, you have a chance to speak.
I think that's pathetic. That's absolutely pathetic. First of all, you confuse conservative with Republican. I do not confuse the word conservative with Republican.
I'm conservative.
Republicanism ended when Ronald Reagan left the White House after the 88 election in 1989 when George Bush Sr. took over. First of all, if you want to talk about the mortgage crisis, which I agree with you, the Democrats are scum. They're absolute thieves, and they've been running the den of thieves. But the problem is that they convinced the Republicans to join in on the thievery. George Bush, the absolute pathetic moron that we have in the White House right now, made a speech at the beginning of all of this mess, in which he was bashing the rest of us because there are too many Anglos. He said, "John, you know it, and I know it." He said, "Too many Anglos own homes, and not enough Latinos and blacks."
Well,
he
you
said
see,
that, and I quote in his speech. I'm not even making this up. I can't believe it. He said that.
Well, Mike. Well, actually, hold on, Mike.
You tell me that that's conservative.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on.
Rear end and
Mike, if you can't control yourself, I'm going to pot you down, and you know, and then I'll bring you back up. But you know, when
well, you don't like it, John. When
no,
I'm,
no, no, no. Hold on.
Completely confused. But
you're
going to conservatism and Republicanism.
No, you're going to get plenty of time. As a matter of fact, the only two people really who were out in front trying to do something about this was John McCain, and I'm sure you heard that report that he submitted to Congress saying that something's got to be done about this. And the other one was George Bush, who in September of 2003, he proposed a new agency to oversee regulatory forms of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae.
That's fine. I agree with that 100%, but I don't know where you come off saying that all I want to do is bash Republicans. I don't. What I'm trying to say is that the government and the Congress are completely corrupt on all sides.
I got to apologize because I figure you're coming from. I've been
well, look, we're
going to
be. Listen, fellas, we're going to be going to a break in a couple of minutes or in about 30 seconds, and we'll bring you back, all right? So, you know.
So just stay cool.
Yeah, if the music.
Stay cool. Don't
when,
get
when you
too,
hear the music,
too,
don't hang
yeah,
up.
Yeah,
and,
just stay
and,
where you are.
And there we go. Yeah, well, this ends this portion, the shortwave portion of The Right Perspective with Cheryl, and Frank will be back next year.
Oh my God! I gotta bring a pillow and a blanket.
I better change my liquor next week, and we'll be back shortly. Just give us about 30 seconds, and we'll end this portion of the show with a quote from the great Ronald Reagan. And I want to get the audio for this. He said, "Republicans look at America's every day as July 4th." The Democrats look every day as America as being April 15th. And Joe Biden's remark about taxes proved it, folks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, another hour of news, opinion, passion.
Now, here they are.
John from Staten Island and Frank from Queens.
On The Right Perspective. That's where you can find all of that. All right. We're going to get back to this interesting conversation with Ron of Ardmore and Mike of Bethpage and all of us here. And we'll bring up Steve from Wisconsin in a couple
of
minutes.
Hold on, Steve.
Yeah, we appreciate your patience. Fellas, I forget who was speaking before the break. Was it Mike?
Both of them.
Not mine. Mike can go.
Am I on?
Yeah,
yes,
go ahead.
You're all on.
Go ahead.
I wanted to say, look, John. Here's the thing. I think the government of the United States right now is corrupt from head to toe. We are absolutely leaderless. We have a moron in the White House who doesn't even know how to utter a simple declarative English sentence.
Oh, that's a load of hooey. See, there you go again.
He is a moron.
Oh, wait a minute. George Bush has made some of the best speeches I've ever heard, especially on the war on terror.
What about the one about Anglos, John? What about that one? Or what about the speech, the off-the-cuff speeches he made calling you a racist?
Well, wait a minute. Hold it.
Because Congress, yeah. you might dare to oppose him on illegal on his amnesty provisions that he was trying
We have fought him when he's been wrong and we won, but it doesn't mean that wait a minute, Mike, let me finish my thought. It doesn't mean that when he said that he wants people who are unqualified to get loans.
He doesn't know who's qualified or who isn't.
It's not his job.
You're attacking him personally. You got to get to the economic facts if you want to back up what you're saying.
The president of the United States to be cheerleading mortgages. The president of the United States has enumerated powers in the Constitution, and one of them is not going around the country and saying too many Anglos own homes.
I never heard you call up and bash Bill Clinton for that time when he said
that
there's too many white people.
I despised him with all my soul. Bill Clinton was the biggest charlatan. I can't decide who the biggest charlatan.
Or he said he can't wait until white people are the minority in America.
Well, Bill Clinton is not president anymore.
Bill Clinton might as well be president, because every time a serious problem pops up, we find that it had its origins in the Clinton regime, and that's why
What did George Bush do to stop it?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. He did try and stop it, and the Democrats stopped him.
Oh, baloney.
I don't know if you've been reading about this, but George Bush
I have
was,
been reading about
now,
it.
Now, George,
I even
George
know,
Bush
I know
has been
stifled.
George Bush is. You didn't know that George Bush
Why?
Tried to stop it and the
I
Democrats
know so
stopped
him.
This.
Why in the world?
Uh-oh.
All right.
Okay.
I'm going to bring up Ron, and I
Hello,
cut Mike
Ron.
Off
hey.
Because
yeah.
I'm not going to put up with people trying to talk over when you try and speak. And I know it gets heated and everything, but people can't hear us when one person is shouting over the other, and I'm going to finish my thought, and then I'll bring back up. It came out today that George Bush tried to stop this, and the Democrats would not let him, just like they wouldn't let him revise Social Security to save that. And what's going to happen now with Social Security, which was already in trouble, and now we find out that the government's going to have to lay out $1 trillion to do all of these bailouts. What's going to happen to Social Security now? Is that going to be put on, not on the back burner, but off the stove altogether? But George Bush tried to stop this along with John McCain, and they were stifled by the Democrats. Mike, you back up. Don't talk over us.
Here's the thing. We have a $500 billion annual budget deficit. We have a national debt right now that on the books, the way Congress in their crooked manner of bookkeeping logs that debt, it's about $10 trillion with a T. There's $47 trillion of unfunded liabilities right now, including Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Right now, the dollar is on the verge of collapse.
No, it's not.
Oh, it is. In fact, this whipsawing that's been going on is all part and parcel to a market changing direction.
As a matter of fact, last week a report came out said that the dollar is whipping the euro, and it's stronger than other currencies. And it was making a comeback.
It's coming up.
It's been coming up.
It's been.
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying whose report? Whose report? Are you
Bloomberg,
wait a minute? Mike, are you saying? Are you saying you don't want to believe it because you don't want to believe it and you were wrong?
John, I just asked you a question.
Fox News, Market Watch.
That's right, on the Rush Limbaugh show.
Reuters.
It's all lies.
Ah, you see, you know, Mike, you're a phony. I'll tell you why. You know, you haven't learned the lesson yet. Since when are conservatives the liars? Conservatives always turn out to be right, and we always catch the liberals in their lies.
Was Duke Cunningham a conservative?
What's Duke Cunningham got there? Could you make a connection?
Is he conservative?
Could you make a connection?
Yeah, because he's in jail right now for corruption. He's a congressman, John.
I know who he is.
Well,
let's take a look at the other. Well, hold it.
Went from one subject to another.
Well, look, I put Mike on hold again because I can't finish a thought without him jumping in. He wants to bring up Duke Cunningham. Let's bring up Charlie Rangel. Let's bring up Elliot Spitzer. Let's bring up Elliot Spitzer, who just had to resign. How about Jim McGreevy, who had to resign because he was a crackpot and put his lover in a very important position? Let's talk about William Jefferson with his $90,000 in his freezer. How about the mayor of Michigan, who's going to jail soon? How about Tony Seminario this week, who just is just got indicted for taking bribes? One Democrat after the other, and he wants to talk. You, Mike, you want to talk about Duke Cunningham? I'm bringing you back up now. Go ahead. And it goes on, and I'll break out my Democratic scandal file.
I don't excuse Charlie Rangel. He should be in jail. I think that all of those people you named should be in jail. What else do you want me to say? It is you who defend the indefensible, John, not I.
But did I say, I don't support Duke Cunningham. But why do you bring up a Republican? Well, why don't you talk about all the others before?
Because Republicans are just as corrupt as Democrats right now. They lie.
No,
they're not.
No,
they're out there, but
this housing crisis started with Clinton.
Our interests against the Democrats. When do you see them getting up in Congress and attacking? The only thing that they've done recently
was the
oil drilling thing, which is commendable.
But
everything else, they stand away from. And
yeah.
I'll tell you,
let me ask you something. When was the Mike? When was the last time we saw the Democrats do anything commendable? Can you name it?
Well, probably John F. Kennedy was about the last time.
Oh, no. That is not the Democrats. That's an old these Democrats are not the Democrat Party.
I say going that back that far.
Of 40 years ago.
I do not stand with them. However, on the other side of it right now, I do believe it is my reasoning that what they are doing is, in other words, they had to bail these companies out in order to keep the dollar up, to prevent a run on the dollar by the Chinese and the Russians, who collect, and the Japanese, by the way, too, who collectively own at least $1 trillion of our debt.
But they put it to Mike. Do you think the Japanese people are that stupid to see that we're just printing, pressing money here? Do you think that the Chinese who got the debt think, America's bailed? Where do they think that money's coming from? It's coming out of thin air.
It's being printed.
So they're not that dumb. They're not dumb people. Neither am I sitting here in Ardmore, PA, knowing what these bailouts are a lot of trouble. I'm not going to defend the bailouts.
And I agree with you.
Well, let's look at the cause of these bailouts, and I pinpointed it back to about 15 years ago when the Democrats were running the show, when the Democrats had the House, the Senate, and Bill Clinton. They pandered to a group, loosened to the standards. They were the ones that really deregulated things for their own political gains and their own interests. And
go to it, Bron. You're right. You are right on.
You're absolutely right.
They're not going to fight
true.
The tide if everybody
knows. For 8 years,
it.
We've had a moron in the White House who has not
brought
a moron.
By saying that, you're not backing up. You're not backing up your claim just by calling people names and giving them labels like
Cheryl,
that.
Cheryl, what do you think it is when someone calls you an Anglo? George Bush said, did you hear that?
We're discussing.
I heard the speech.
Okay.
Yeah, but is that all
you? This is something you do
Mike,
denying.
Is that all
denying that he got up there and he said, too many Anglos own homes.
Yeah, is that all you've got, though, Mike?
It's not. I don't care who owns the home.
You can go back to
the whole time. His constant dealings with the Saudi royal family. The fact that after 9/11, he should have invaded the Saudi and taken the Saudi oil.
We're talking about Saudis and mortgages. John from Connecticut is saying to you, Mike, that you're a pacifist. And you hate Bush for the war on
That's
terror. He does
I
not.
Guess that Bush should have, when he knew that 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, he should have seized the Saudi oil fields the next day.
All right,
that has nothing
everybody,
to do with okay. mortgages.
All right, everybody, can hold on a second.
Knock on doors and kick in doors instead of blowing
right.
those houses
We're
away.
Talking about
all right,
mortgages.
All right.
This guy is an absolute fool.
All right, hold on one second. We're going to bring up Steve of Wisconsin. I don't want to keep him waiting. See if he wants to join in on this.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi, Steve.
Hello,
sorry to keep you waiting if you want to join in on this.
let's
have a party.
Yeah, I bet you've been talking into an empty telephone there.
Did you want to say something, Steve?
Yeah. Wow, what a pillow fight.
Wow. I'm so glad nobody can throw pies because we're on the radio over here.
All right, Steve, what did you want to contribute?
Well, actually, what I wanted to contribute is what probably seems so anticlimactic with the heated discussion that you're in, but I wanted to continue something that I was talking about last week, considering Palin.
Yes.
Okay. You talk about a case of deja vu. I think most of the people that are in this conversation here can remember a woman by the name of Anita Bryant.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
A beauty contest winner down there.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And she sang a song.
See, what they're trying to do, let me say this real
Yeah,
quick.
The gays ruined her career.
With the education.
Because they didn't like the fact that she was anti-gay.
She didn't want them teaching in the schools.
And then I'm going to let you guys get back to your pillow fight. But Anita Bryant took on the homosexual agenda, and the vicious homosexuals, they destroyed that woman's career. And there also, there was another woman here that still has a talk show, and she also took on the homosexual agenda, and they also went after her and damn near destroyed her career, and I'm talking about Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura is probably only on half the stations that she used to be on once they went after her and started this big homosexual boycott on her sponsors and so forth. I didn't listen to her show. That type of a show doesn't interest me because you swear to God, every idiot in the whole United States was calling her show. I mean, I've never heard so many.
Well, they try and destroy anyway. The gist of it is they try and destroy anyone who dares to oppose them,
even if
they don't know. Look what Sarah Bernhardt said about a woman she never met.
Right.
She doesn't.
Right.
But if you dare oppose them politically on anything, they want to kill. And believe me, they would kill you if they could.
Right.
The left is dangerous.
All
right, hold on, Steve.
I'm going to drop off. All
right,
go ahead. I'm going to let you guys get back to your conversation.
Okay, go ahead.
And that is that from all reports that we've had, 98% of the registered blacks are going to vote for Obama.
Yeah, that's not racist, though.
Correct.
No, but here's the thing. What the blacks have not figured out, and that is that high a percentage of them merely voting for him merely on the grounds of racial solidarity, he now owns them lock, stock, and barrel. And he is the new plantation owner, but they're so stupid they haven't even figured it out. That's all I wanted to say.
But they don't look upon it that way, Steve. What they look upon it is that a black man finally being in charge of Whitey. Now Whitey is the slave, and Barack will be the slave master, and it's their turn now to crack that whip.
Right.
That's the way that they look on it. They look on it as this being a white nation, and they're going to have a black man in charge for once,
right.
And they don't give a damn that the country will be destroyed. When they don't have a country to whine about, where are they going to go? Senegal or Lower Tanganyika?
Right, but what they don't realize is that if Obama gets in, he's going to be the new plantation owner.
Yeah,
and he owns them lock, stock, and barrel.
Steve, giving consideration to, what about Al Not-So-Sharpton and Jesse Jackson?
They've been awful quiet.
Yeah. They are going to show up, and they want part of that power, too.
Right.
They're quiet for now.
Yes.
Yeah, who's that, Mike?
John, yeah. This is proving my point.
All right, Steve. All right, thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Every time something happens, the Bush administration and these rhino Republicans go after you. It's like every time we have something happen, like, for instance, after 9/11, what did they do? Instead of taking Muslims and Arabs off of planes, they stick prods up your rear end and make sure that you don't have any explosives.
Mike, we were talking about mortgages.
Now you're sticking probes up everybody's rear end over here.
Cheryl, let's stay with...
haven't flown recently, is they shake you down. They shake down nuns in wheelchairs.
Mike.
But no, they're not taking Muslims off the planes. Hassan, Muhammad, and Khalid can get on the plane, no problem.
You got to be strip searched.
Oh, my God, at the airport.
You can laugh all you want, but that's what's happening.
Mike.
Mike, that's not about mortgages. You were talking about mortgages.
Cheryl, what I'm trying to tell you is that the Republicans are just as corrupt as the Democrats.
No. The Democrats are a number one, and the Republicans are trying to figure out how they do it.
Mike, anybody who would stand up against the Arabs would be hung out to dry as politically incorrect. Would really
by who though? But not only the Democrats, but by the Republicans too. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Every public educated student in the last 30 years, Michael. Now, who controls that government education system? Are the Democrats? See, I apologize earlier before you were on the air. I kind of like laid into it because I figured you were going to be a little. Now you're a brother in thought with me. I am very conservative.
We would not get into a barroom brawl, but John wants to beat me up.
No, but I
see. By the way,
it just seems.
I'm a bar bouncer. I'm an ex-bar bouncer. Okay?
It just seems that no matter what the topic is, somehow Mike comes along and has to find a way to bash Republicans instead of the Democrats.
And the
Republicans are not the new American Communist Party.
Right, yes,
the Democrats are.
But the Republicans are commie light. You know, that's really what it comes
down to.
You know what?
That way, but I think that's because the whole country's heading that way.
Yeah, but the Republicans may have their shortcomings, but at least they're our party that has the shortcomings because they do at least half the things right. The Democrats are
anymore because I'm re-registering as independent because
that's cool, Mike.
I register as a conservative. I don't consider myself a Republican, but I'll tell you one thing. This country could very well do without the second party these days, Democrats.
Yes. Well,
I wouldn't mind if we only had one party, the Republican Party.
Let me tell you a quick story about a Democrat here that you're going to want to hear, and it's horrifying. I'm not going to mention the congressman's name because you never know what kind of retribution these guys can pull on you. But I was on an airplane going down to Washington, D.C. recently, and a congressman was sitting right next to me. And I tortured him, John. I asked him every question I could. And when I finally got to it, I said to him, I mentioned the $500 billion annual budget deficit. I mentioned the $10 trillion national debt and the $47 trillion with a T, unfunded liabilities. I said to him, Congressman, how long do you think that you and your Democrat buddies can keep this game going? And his answer to me, John, was, you were Republican. I said, Congressman, you don't know what I am. I said, the currency is about to be debauched by your shenanigans of overspending. And he says, what mean debauched? What mean debauched? John, the guy didn't even know what debauched the currency means. So I'm telling you.
We
are in a lot of trouble with who we have in the Congress. We have literally more.
You should have told him to take a walk around the airplane. Get up and take a walk around the airplane. That's all.
Outside the
airplane.
Sure, we almost came to blows over it, I'm telling you.
When you go on a flight and you know that you can't open up the doors, look to behave yourself.
I am not kidding you by this. We have people in the Congress who don't even have any inkling or understanding of the economy.
I know.
Actually,
yeah.
Braun,
Mike, we figured that out long ago.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. And they're not just Democrats. They're Republicans too. That's what I'm trying to say is that I think just like William F. Buckley once said, he said, I would sooner be ruled by the first 450 names in the Boston telephone directory than I would be by this Congress. And that's the way I look at it. I think they're all bums.
I think they're corrupt. I can't say they all are because I know some are property.
Last one of them off of what we do, off of our hard-earned money. And not only that, John, but you are right that they were the ones who instigated the fact that they were selling mortgages to people who didn't deserve them.
Good.
But now
we're back to the mortgages.
For it.
I want to ask Ron, did you hear the John Bogle interview on Smirkonish?
I really don't listen to Smirkonish anymore because he's that whale in the pit. But I heard a Vogel interview, and I'm trying to remember
if it was him or Steve.
I tell you, a good show to listen to, Cheryl, is tomorrow morning at about 8 o'clock. Is Steve Cordasco?
He does that. He really goes in depth, and he's not your average. He's not like Jim Cramer.
I gotta wake up at 8 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah.
On Saturday
well, you know
morning. What? Yeah, Saturday eight to ten, and he tells you like it's you know.
I couldn't find that other
because he's gonna give you a heart attack. He tells you like it is.
Well, you know what, fellas? I'm sorry, Cheryl.
That's okay. Go ahead.
You know, I wonder if the Democrats are going to be as upset as about the $1 trillion. That we're going to have to lay out because of the damage that they caused with their god, Bill Clinton, and their Fuhrer. We're going to have to lay that money out now to rescue our financial system. Are they going to be as upset about that as the $1 trillion that we had to spend in Iraq to bring democracy to that part of the world and win part of the war on terror? Yeah, let's see if they scream about that. Hold on, Mike. That $1 trillion that we spend in Iraq will come back to us a thousandfold. You know why? Because when companies start to invest in Iraq, American companies, and they start doing more business, they will have to start hiring more people over there and more Americans and more people back here in the States because they're doing more business. And more products will be sold and more people will get jobs and they'll pay taxes on their salary that will come back into the treasury. Plus, democracy, when those countries around Iraq starts seeing what a much better life the people of Iraq have compared to them, they're going to start to demand a little bit more democracy, and it will slowly and slowly spread, and they'll demand that they have more freedom. So the same thing can happen to their countries. That money, that trillion, will come back to us a lot more, probably a millionfold, maybe 100 years from now. But you won't hear that the Democrats never look at it that way. They only look at it in the short term. Ooh, we're spending $1 trillion over there because they want to get immediate political mileage out of it, and they ignore all the time the long-term benefits. The Democrats never look to the future. They only look for the moment for short political gain so they can bash anyone who's doing the job that they should have gotten done over the head with any negative results that may come in the short term, but in the long term, it always works out whenever you're fighting for freedom. It's never wrong to get rid of a dictator and try and bring freedom and democracy to another country. It always pans out in the long term.
John, you are...
You're wrong about that.
No, John is right. John is right.
You see, there goes Mike again. Try to explain away the... Wait a minute.
The war should only be fought for one reason, and that is to...
Okay.
All right. Okay. I put Mike back on hold because I'm not going to let him talk over me.
Let me first say...
I
want to first say why John is correct. Just this week alone, with all of the battles that are going on, the attack with Yemen, all of the war, what did Barack Obama do? He went to a party, a fundraiser. Barbara Streisand is singing. Am I correct?
They're
Ron?
Whining about the economy, but they'll spend $28,000 to give to this anti-American, racist, bigot, communist scum.
So he could
buy the
newspapers off. So he could buy the television stations off. He goes to a party.
But I want to hear Mike try and explain away the logic of what I said. Go ahead, Mike.
It's completely illogical what you said, because any attempt to nation build in Iraq is doomed to failure, because simply those people don't want anything but Islam, my friend. And the only thing they understand is the aggressive.
You're wrong. Because
no, you're wrong.
No, I'll tell you why you're wrong. Because put Mike on hold again because I'm going to explain to him why he's wrong.
He knows anybody intimately, first name basis, from anybody that area of the world. I know several people. I know 7-8 people that are there, and they want it. They like the old. You meet anybody from Vietnam that's living in America today, they love America.
Yeah.
Okay. These people here, we didn't complete Vietnam. We complete over here, and seriously, Michael, if you know anybody from Vietnam, any Vietnamese American, first or second generation, they kiss the ground and they love it, and and they love Ronald Reagan. I mean, they love the true conservatism.
Yeah.
They be free, and they don't like that communist. I could go so far, because earlier you were talking about the Rosenbergs and the Communist Party, the 40s and the 50s, when Joe McCarthy, and I did read that book by that you guys had the author on, Blacklisted by History. Today's Democratic Party is the Communist Party went under, I believe, I'm 42 years old, they went underground and did their work 40 years ago, 50 years ago. And it took time, but they infiltrated the colleges gradually. They infiltrated the political party, the Democrat. They infiltrated the black community. Martin Luther King was at Communist Party meetings. He was not a communist.
Yeah, but
that's who backed these people, and that's who's backing William Ayers.
I know that, but I want to get back to what Mike was saying, that these people don't want democracy. Is that why the Shias and the other groups got together to kick Al-Qaeda out? Nobody ever thought that would happen. And then they saw what better life they could have with democracy and get rid. And here's an Iraqi Kurd woman praising Bush.
Hello, Mr. President. My name is Tara Mosa. I'm an American Iraqi Kurd. I would like to salute you and salute all the troops of freeing 27 million people. They are free. Please stop questioning the administration and their decision. It was the best decision anybody could take. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Ron, don't talk while we're playing the soundbite. I'm trying to, I want people to hear this. And here's an Iraqi voter.
Anybody who doesn't appreciate what America had done and President Bush, let them go to hell.
Now, there you go.
Okay.
I'm going to bring Mike back up.
But can I explain real quick before we bring Mike
go
up?
Go ahead. Yeah, but when we're playing a soundbite, you can't talk. Because.
There it is, John.
One at a time, folks.
Cheryl, you're the ref. Who goes?
Go ahead, Ron.
Ron has the floor.
Thank you. America is like a push-button society. We push a button and the TV's on. We push a button, TV's off. We dial a phone. It's right there at our fingertips. These people like this do not have that. We expect the war to be over. Who knows how? Who defines when a war is over? And these people have been fighting for thousands of years, thousands. Now they expect us to come in here and clean up them. I think within 10 years, and the success we have made. And I'm not I've been on this show before, and I battled John because I was a big Ron Paul fan. I got to get with the more conservative candidate now, but again. This push-button mentality where things are done, going on and we're moving to the next step, it doesn't work like a push. It's not like flicking a light switch and everything's happy.
We never thought the Japanese could change because they were just as fanatical as these nuts. They were maniacs, and look what's happened to them. They've become.
And it took some time.
We're going to be going to a break in about 30 seconds,
okay,
folks.
Well,
and then we'll hold.
I'm going to go to bed, John.
All right.
I got the book. Cheryl, good job. Frank, if you're listening,
All right, Mike.
Talk to you later. Mike,
all right,
good talking,
good night, Ron. And
Mike, Ron.
If you want to hang on, Mike, you're welcome. We'll be going to a break shortly, we'll continue this, and we'll bring up Frank from upstate as well. We'll bring him in on this, and we'll see what he has to say. There we go.
Okay.
All right, folks, if you want to get in on this boxing match here at one.
Oh, boy, everybody to your corners.
1-718-761-9996.
If she knew what she wants, if she knew what she needs, if she knew what she wants, if she knew what she wants, giving it to her, giving it to her, she wants everything. There's nothing she wants.
Mr. Smith.
Being the most forgetful person in the world must be rough.
It is, Bonnie.
The name's Betty.
I always forget to buy gifts for birthdays, anniversaries, and graduations, Betsy.
It's Betty. You should check out the Savings Bonds Easy Saver Plan from the U.S. Treasury. It's the easy way to give U.S. savings bonds automatically. Just visit www.easysaver.gov and you'll never have to remember to buy gifts again.
Thanks! I'll never forget this, Barb.
It's Betty.
A message from the Department of the Treasury.
John from Staten Island.
Vintage Frank from Queens.
From the capital of talk radio, New York, New York. This is the right perspective on your radio.
Why is everyone afraid? Why is this night different from all others?
Because this night,
John from Staten Island and Frank from Queens
will deliver us from the bondage of Egypt.
Great ZZ Top. Good sounds there. All right, folks, we're in the middle of a, I guess we have the hat trick going here. We got Don in Pennsylvania just called up, and we're going to bring up Frank from upstate, and he can join the fray and throw the switch. Frank, you're on. And,
hello, Frank.
And Don, you're with us as well.
Hello,
if you want to
Don.
Join in.
And,
hello, Cheryl. Hello, everybody.
Who's this, Frank?
I think I know what Mike is getting at. You know, the rot has spread from the Democratic Party, and it's crept into the Republican Party. You know, they started talking about compassionate conservatism. We have the border problem. Nobody seems to be talking about our border. We're worried about Iraq. I could give a damn how they live over in Iraq. Next thing you know, they'll be building cars over there and taking jobs over. They'll be doing the jobs over there we're supposed to be doing. I'm not really happy with the way this is going. When do we start thinking about America?
Well, I disagree with you. You can't assume. You know, first of all, this nonsense about Americans losing jobs. We've gained just as many jobs in this country from other companies coming over here and hiring Americans. It's a two-way street. Everyone seems to think this is a one-way thing. All the jobs are leaving and going over. That's not true. A lot of
jobs do we have here? Can I say something?
Are you kidding? I can bring up my file and
this fellow may be a Democrat in disguise.
John?
No. It's
John?
I know he's a seminar caller.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead. Is this Frank or is this Don?
This is Frank.
Okay, Frank. Go ahead.
Number one, I agree with John. How come the unemployment is lowest it's been in 25 years? I mean, if all the jobs were shipped out, how come we only got 5%, less than 5%?
And you know what, Frank? That's despite the fact that we've brought in about 30 million more immigrants in the last 15 years.
Number two, Iraq is going to order something like 20 F-16s. You think that'll be good for Douglas?
I know. A lot of people are short-sighted.
They're going to start ordering all their, instead of buying from Russia.
Why does everybody have a, it's amazing. Why do these guys take their wet towels someplace else? Everything is negative.
Well,
they should all be Democrats.
Said, it's not negative. And I tell you, John, I'm definitely not a Democrat. But I'm a realist. I'm seeing this with my own two eyes. We're worried about Iraq, but yet our own borders are being flooded with
well,
illegals.
Now it's the borders. Now you're talking
about
the borders.
What happened to that issue with the Republicans? It just went away. It just disappeared. Look, the border is a problem, number one. Number two, McCain said he'd close the border. I'd like to get the guy elected to see if he'd put Barack Obama wants to expand it.
Well, what they have to do is stop this with if a baby is born in America, They have to stop it with the babies being born in America are American citizens, that they get Social Security cards, they get covered. They got to cut that out. And they got to cut it out that if any of these undocumented workers should happen to be
illegal invaders,
that if they are in jail, if they are collecting welfare, what are they doing having more children?
Well,
forget it. They're not entitled. They're not allowed. And they have to increase the deportation of them and get them out. I was reading in one of the jewelry magazines that there are perpetual thieves. They keep getting deported, but since they know their way back so well, they know the roads and they know the highways, they come back and they rob again.
Well, Cheryl, it seems like the Democrats or the Republicans, neither party is doing anything about it.
Well, that is why it is good to have these shows so that you can call in, speak up, and this way they are listening and they hear what is going on.
Well,
the Democrats want to have that fair doctrine, whatever they call it, and get rid of Rush Limbaugh and get rid of talk radio.
Yeah, well, you know, Obama wanted to get rid of some host or something on a show recently that criticized him.
But, you know, we talk and talk and talk until we're blue in the face, and then we tell everybody how unhappy we are with it. And then you get a John McCain, and then you take your eye off the ball. You forget about the border, and then everything goes away.
Well,
and it seems like we keep sliding to the left. If there is a left and right,
your question?
The right never, the right always slides to the left. The left never slides to the right.
That's right.
Right,
that's
left.
Right. We, our side always tries to compromise and get along, and it always. The only way you get along with liberals is if you lose the argument. That's what they call getting along and bipartisanship.
John.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that's the whole point of all of this. It's because our side does not believe in those things that you believe in. That's why they cozy up and go along to get along. It's because they never believed in the Republican principles as espoused by Ronald Reagan to begin with.
Well,
they don't
we espouse those principles. He is our disciple. He is, we're his disciples. He is our idol.
This is
why we continuously repeat and say the things that Ronald Reagan has said over the course of the many years. That's the doctrine we stick with.
And Ronald Reagan was doing nothing more than repeating what the Founding Fathers had said two centuries earlier. But you don't hear, ever since George Bush Sr. uttered the words, a kindly, gently nation, on the steps of the Capitol in his inaugural address, ever since then, the Republican Party has been sliding downhill ever since and sliding into the same sewer of socialism.
It's our responsibility to set them straight.
The father. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, but you know
another
what?
The thing is, what's more important? What's the most important thing? Are securing our borders and taking care of our country, or worrying about jobs in Iraq?
Well,
and
someone like Sarah Palin,
but wait a minute. You see, this is the short-sightedness again. We should be concerned about jobs in Iraq because the more people have jobs everywhere in the world, the more peace there is.
No, John, the more that we crush and destroy the enemy, and the more that they are in intense fear of us, the more safe we will be.
Well, that's what we did. That's what we did in Iraq.
We ought to be getting that
oil
out of the ground.
I do.
And taking the payment for the freedom that we bought these people.
I do. Okay, we're going to get to everybody. I do care about jobs in Iraq because it means that they
jobs
will eventually buy American products.
That's right.
I don't think so. I think they're going to buy.
Of course, they're going to buy American.
One
at a
time, folks.
Products from elsewhere.
Listen, when you hear all that chatter going on, you know we got to step in and say, Don, were you saying something?
Now, foreign entanglements. When does it get to a point where we're being tangled up in foreign countries?
Well, you know what? When those foreigners are coming after us and blowing us up here like they did in the World Trade Center and other places and in Europe where they're blowing up trains and everything else, now that foreign entanglement becomes a domestic entanglement because they're coming after us. And I say get them.
Because they brought 8,000 refugees from Iraq over here.
But we defend ourselves, but that's it. We don't get all wrapped up in their politics. I don't agree with that.
We need a counterbalance to Iran.
We have to defend our interests around the world. You know, when you say defend us, it doesn't mean just within the borders of the United States. It means any investment and any other interest that we have around the globe. This is a global economy, and it's a global situation now. It's not just the United States that's protected by two big oceans.
Well, I guess we'll just let the UN handle it then if it's global.
Well,
talking about the UN
should be the next target after our troops come home.
I agree with you with that, but this seems to be part of a UN plan.
No, it isn't.
What's more dangerous to the United States, Iran or Mexico?
Barack Obama.
I think they're equally
dangerous.
Barack Obama is the danger.
Any threat there is on the horizon.
Barack Obama is the danger.
Lady and gentlemen, again, the whole point comes back to the fact that the President of the United States has willfully conducted a policy of allowing thousands upon thousands of Muslims to flood into our country. They have nothing but contempt for your common sense. They have nothing but contempt for your common decency, Cheryl. They have nothing but contempt for anything you stand for. They're just doing this to feather their own nest. I don't have any idea why they commit such acts.
Yeah, hold on. Mike's speaking now,
okay.
So hold on. You know, when you hear
I have no idea.
Hold on. Don't ask, can anybody hear me when you hear somebody else speaking?
I didn't know if anybody was here.
Okay, I don't know if you can, maybe you can't hear on the phone, but when someone else speaking, there's no need to ask,
anybody
hear me? Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, John. I'm saying they have nothing but contempt for what we feel about these things. That's why they continue to do them. There was not even 1 ounce of debate on whether to let in Muslim refugees from Iraq. But yet there's tens of thousands of them are pouring into our country as we speak. You know,
well, where do you get that? Now, you asked me.
You're thinking that the Republicans might save us. I'm voting for John McCain not because I'm voting for him. I can't stand the man. I'm just voting against Obama because he'll just be a greater catastrophe. But I realize one thing. All we're doing in this election is rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic because it's sinking because of the fact.
Well, you know what?
That we allowed them to take our constitutional rights from us and that the President of the United States and the Congress stopped going along with enumerated powers and started going along with all sorts of ridiculous things that are not enumerated in the Constitution.
Yeah, but you know
that's when we lost our rights.
You know what, Mike, though? There's a thing called the American people. And with the communications and the media that we have today, a lot of this stuff that the politicians think they're going to get away with, they can't get away with it now. Just like the American people spoke out against the Dubai deal, and they stopped that, and they stopped that so-called comprehensive. They love to use that word, comprehensive, and I don't know what the hell they're talking about. Immigration bill, we stopped that too. And that there's a lot of checks
there's
a lot of checks and balances in this country that we can use, and the politicians know that we're watching.
Well, you're right about that, John. The American people did for once get up from the baseball game, get up from the football game, and at least make a few phone calls and send a few emails in order to stop that nonsense. But I'm wondering how much we really stopped it. I think
stopped
the legislation from going through. But what they did is through the back door, they let this stuff happen anyway.
Mike, okay, let me ask
Frank,
you a question.
I guess Frank got tired or angry and hung up. But
yeah.
Frank, you're free to call again if you want to partake, and we'll put you up.
Mike, I want to know, because you live in New York. There's going to be a rally Monday at the UN, one of your favorite haunts over there. And Hillary Clinton was supposed to show up, but as soon as she found out that Sarah Palin was going to be there, she backed out, and the liberal Jews who were setting up this thing, which is totally against Iran, which is to be against Iran, that Iran should not have nuclear weapons. Hillary Clinton destroyed the whole rally. because she said that it's a partisan effort. Well, Iran is looking to kill the Jews. They're looking to annihilate Israel. We're next on their list. So it's not that they just want to annihilate Israel. That's their starting point. This is a major political item. This was a big rally that was coming up, and little old Miss Muffet over there, Miss Hillary, said, I'm not going if Sarah Palin is going. John McCain said Barack Obama should come instead of Hillary. They could not bring Biden because Biden has already declared, you got to get used to a nuclear Iran. Stupid comment. What is your comment, Mike? Because you're saying all of these Iraqis are coming in. I'm concerned about Iran. Last year when the head guy, I can't pronounce his name, when he came to New York, the stupid college called Columbia, big time moneymaker.
Yeah, they pandered to him.
Yeah, they had him as a speaker. I say that these colleges are just fundraisers, just places to collect money and to cover up that it's just a fundraiser. They give you what they call a diploma, but they don't educate you. They indoctrinate you.
They can't read it. Don, did you want to, Mike, just hold on. Let me see what Don wants to say.
Going back to Iran, is we're rotten. The United States is beginning to rot from the inside out, and we're worried about Iran when we're being flooded from everywhere.
No, we're not worried about, you see, that's the mistake. We're worried, we shouldn't be worried about Iran, this number one sponsor of terrorism around the world, not just in the Middle East.
I'm not saying we shouldn't defend ourselves against Iran or Iraq or anywhere else. Like you're talking about putting...
Well, we're not defending ourselves against Iran and Iraq. We're defending ourselves against the terrorists. Iraq is a battle in the war on terror. Iran is a battle in the war on terror. They just blew up the American embassy.
In Yemen.
In Yemen. That's where they blew up the coal, the USS Cole. These guys are all over the place, and you've got to hunt them down. It's got to be like the island hopping of World War II. You've got to go from country to country that they deem as being open for them to occupy and gain a hold in, and you've got to do it one by one and finally wipe them out. And if it takes 100 years, it's got to be done.
Well, you're right, John, but that's not our strategy.
And I agree with that, but the thing is, John, all right, Al-Qaeda is a terrorist group, right? Correct?
Yes.
Don't you consider La Raza a terrorist group? What the hell are we doing about them?
Well, I don't see... La Raza is a subversive group. I don't know if they're a terror group. I don't see them chopping heads off. But they're just as... They can be just as dangerous in that they want to undermine this country and destroy it and take it over by sheer number.
Well, when you start attacking citizens and coming across the border and you have a country like Mexico that has foreign troops stepping over our border, threatening border agents.
Well, that's the M-13. M-13, I think, is a terrorist group.
Well, there's another, but what are we doing? In other words, half a world away we're worrying about. We got all these terrorist groups, and I agree. We should fight against them.
Well, wait a minute. Don, since when can't this country do two things at once? In World War II...
But we're not doing two things at once, though. We're only doing that one thing. Well, we're not fighting against these other ones. These people are getting rights to vote. Like the Clintons, we put up with these people for how long? I mean... The media keeps manipulating this thing, taking the eye off the ball.
The media has been bought off by the Obama campaign. What are they raising all the money for, to buy off
the
media?
But the thing is, Cheryl, they didn't have to be bought off. The media was on the Democrat side for decades now. Nobody had to buy them off.
The media shouldn't be on anybody's side.
No, but they are.
They support the news, and that's it.
But they are, but they don't even hide it now. They come right out and say it. As far as I'm concerned, you know, look, Frank calls the mainstream media public enemy number one, and that's what they are. And you can see it in all these remarks about Sarah Palin.
As Iran and everybody else, the media is an enemy, too.
Okay, so how do we deal with them? Yes, sir.
Cheryl, I wanted to mention something about Israel. You asked me about it a minute before.
Yeah.
Here's my
I must ask, I must, in the ancient Jewish tradition, answer your question with a question. And my question is this. Israel continuously seems to vote itself into liberal, left-leaning governments. They continuously cry that the press is on their case if they do anything. Yet they went to war with Lebanon, and then once again, just like another Western democracy, failed to crush the enemy. Israel has several submarines. I'm not sure how many they have, but they do have several of them at least. And they have some of the best cruise missiles in the world. A Israeli sub could easily surface in the Persian Gulf and let off a spread of cruise missiles at Iranian targets. They don't have to hit every last one of them. They just need to hit a few. And then cause the issue to be brought to the forefront and to be immediately confronted. I don't know. I just don't understand, Charles. Why in the world does Israel constantly whine, constantly do their thing, but never seems to get any job done? They never seem to go on the offensive.
Well, first of all, I do not have inside information as to what the defense department in Israel is going to be doing. You know, I don't get information that way. But Olmert is resigning. Then he may not resign. He was supposed to resign here in September. September is nearly over, and now he's thinking maybe he won't resign. A lot of people are against Olmert. Netanyahu was in power. Netanyahu may come back in power. Netanyahu is in favor of having these clashes and striking. He is a hawk. They call him a hawk. And so a lot of people like the way he takes care of things, his notions, his ideas. Then you have a million and one other parties in Israel. I do not live in Israel. The citizens of Israel have created all of these parties. You have people on this side of the fence. You have people on that side of the fence. And it is just part of being Jewish that they all argue with one another. They would not be happy unless they could argue with one another. So there will always be major arguments in Israel. But Israel has had various governments. You have had people who have been willing to give away Jerusalem. You have people who say never give away Jerusalem. And I stand with the people who say never give away Jerusalem.
Oy vey.
That's right. From out of the Bible, it says, O Jerusalem, if I forget thee, may my right hand wither, may my tongue lose its cunning. You never give up Jerusalem.
No.
My heart was broken when they had to resettle the people from Gaza. You had right around Purim time in March, you had 8 youngsters killed. I call them youngsters. Most of them were teenagers. The oldest one was in his early 20s. You just had 2 dead Israeli soldiers returned so that prisoners could be released to the Arabs. You have so much dichotomy within Israel, people who are in favor of certain moves, people who are opposed to them. And that's the way it has been in Israel since the time of Cain and Abel.
Well, you know, I wish the other guy had won because he seems a lot tougher than this. She's more liberal, I understand. But we've come a long way since the...
Sounds like Israel's having the same problems the United States is having.
Very true. A lot.
Yes. I think it's the problem of all Western democracies. I think what it is the Israelis in their own consciences cannot seem to deal with the fact that they must destroy the enemy. They don't want to do it. It's not the press that I think they're scared of. I think they're scared of their own consciences.
Mike, you are so wrong. They are outnumbered by the enemy. What are they supposed to do? Spend all of their time?
Cheryl, it's like what William F. Buckley said.
He said, a feather duster is no more effective a weapon than a Sherman tank.
Yeah,
if one does not have the resolve to use the Sherman tank.
But the
I don't think Israelis have the resolve to use the weapons that they
what,
have.
What are you saying? Let Don talk.
The Israelis did that, the whole world would condemn them.
But
and
what would the whole world do?
Exactly.
Well, you know,
exactly. They're always in the wrong.
Not true. Israel's surrounded. They're surrounded by their enemies.
Yeah, let me just
they
jump.
They have the weapons to defend themselves.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know what? They can
they
only
want to obliterate them.
They'd have to bring in, in order to accomplish destroying all their enemies, they'd have to get the United States involved because they couldn't survive financially and weapons-wise. And it's a very hard thing for them to do. They can't do it all on their own. And I don't know if the United States wants to get involved in something that widespread.
I'm sorry, but the United States is not going to be able to help Israel if it can't help itself. And you know what? We're at the point now where we're not helping ourselves. No. We're not helping this
country.
That's
a defeatist attitude.
No, Cheryl, it's an observation, not an attitude.
Well,
he's understanding the problem as it lies before us.
Well, there's a lot of problems. There's no doubt about it. And it's going to be interesting times to live in, but scary times to live in. Fellas, we got to wrap it up.
Thanks a lot.
If each one of you want to have a final punch in there, you know.
Well, we'll give you, to kick it off.
You got 30 seconds.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I just want to remind Joe Biden of one thing, just to bash a Democrat.
Okay, let's hear it.
He thinks it's patriotic to pay taxes. Well, I'd like to remind that absolute moron that this country was founded by men, real men who refused to pay the king's petty tax on tea.
Yeah.
We fired the shot heard round the world, Joe Biden. We're not paying any more taxes.
Yeah, well,
that's a good word.
And I may remind Joe Biden that the liberal 1960s was the decade where the least amount was given to charities. And that so-called decade of greed and decadence, the 1980s, was the decade where the most was given to charities. So, Joe Biden, you know, why don't you try giving more than $300 to charity with you and your wife making $350,000 a year? I think you could. I give more than that, and I don't come close to his salary. Mike, in a few minutes, a little while, I want you to keep listening because I'm going to read an article to show you that this is indeed a mostly Democrat scandal on Wall Street and with our financial system. It's called, the article is from the New York Post, The Wrong Drugs for Wall Street. And that's from this past Thursday. So I'll be reading this shortly. And I think we're going to have the news guy join us pretty soon because Cheryl's going to be leaving at 12 o'clock. She wants to get home a little earlier, and then the news guy can call in, and he'll be co-hosting.
I'm Cinderella.
So, okay, fellas, good night.
Good night.
Good night, Don. Good night, Mike. Thanks for participating.
Cheryl,
yes, yes.
All right, Don.
Yes, thank you, Don, for calling in.
And we're going to go to a fellow we haven't heard from in a while. It's been quite a while. Carrie's from Forest Hill.
Hello.
Hey, Carrie.
Hey, guys.
Yes.
Cheryl, how are you?
Doing good.
Long time. It's been a while.
I used to live in Forest
Hills. Yeah, like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I haven't called in a while. I've been kind of busy, but yeah. Hey, now, since I tuned in late, since Frank is there, was there any mention of Ramadama Ding Dong this
year?
Oh, yes.
He says we're going to continue it next week.
Yes.
Oh, good. I have to call in as Osama Ahtama bin your mama, like I did a few years ago.
Either
way, it's interesting that nobody picked up on Obama's little slip over there.
Yeah.
When he was being interviewed, I think it was on Channel 7.
Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, well, hold on, Carrie. Here's the soundbite you're talking about.
Let's not play games. What I was suggesting, you're absolutely right that John McCain has not talked about my Muslim faith, and you're absolutely right that that has not
Christian
come
faith.
My Christian faith.
Exactly. That's it.
That is the quote.
I saw the clip on YouTube. It's been all over the Internet. But nobody seems to pick up on it. They didn't make a big deal out of it.
They passed right over it.
Absolutely.
What they had commented on, they said, well, Stephanopoulos corrected him. And so they floated right past it. They made no no discussion, no Freudian slip was mentioned. They didn't go into it. They didn't elaborate on it. And if you didn't see it, you wouldn't even know about it. The press and the television have been bought off by Obama. This is where his fundraising money is going. And when the truth comes out, they skip right over it. They put whipped cream on top of it so that you can't see what's under the sweet sugary top. But the truth is there, and it's because of people like you, Carries, that this all gets brought to the public's attention. Well, and it has to be discussed continuously, because the people do not know, and they have to be enlightened, and it all has to come before them, because this is a very big item. This was an absolute Freudian slip. He's supposed to say he is a Christian.
He's a closet Muslim.
He certainly is. What was he before he converted to being a Christian?
He was a Muslim. And what about the quotes from his book that said, "I will, if the political tides turn ugly, I will stand with the Muslims"?
He has quite a bit in his books that he has written only about himself. And when he wrote Dreams from My Father, his father was dead. And the book starts off that the aunt calls him and says, "Barry." That was his name. His name was Barry. He's the one who changed his name. So he's the one who comes up with this.
But what I'm really afraid of, Cheryl and John, I'm afraid of an abominable presidency, simply because there are so many stupid Americans out there. Like I know people that say that, unfortunately, when the economy was doing good and Billy Jeff was in office over there, he got the credit. And now, of course, people are blaming George Bush for the economy.
It's amazing. It really, he got the, Bill Clinton got the credit for an economy, really, that was all during the 6 years.
The residuals of Reagan Bush.
That's right. He was the first president to benefit from the end of the Cold War and
Absolutely.
The end of the arms race. And he didn't have to lay out that $200 billion every year at the time. That's how much we were spending. He was the first president to benefit from that. And he benefited from all of the groundwork that Ronald Reagan laid, the new groundwork to straighten out the economy. And he actually started the reverse of what was then at the time the 10 or 11 year Reagan-Bush economic recovery. And it started with that massive tax increase retroactively in 1993. And then slowly but surely, these environmental restrictions, then the suit of Microsoft. Every company in the world uses Microsoft products, and he sues that company, dragging down the stock market. Also, when he sued the tobacco industry, the pharmaceuticals, the lumber industry.
Hates business. Hates free enterprise.
And it all started.
Don't forget the firearms industry.
Yeah, and that's why we ended up with a recession in the last 2 years of the Clinton regime. It all caught up with us. And everybody thinks because their 401ks went up in the stock market that Bill Clinton was such a great president. No. He benefited from Ronald Reagan's
Absolutely.
Work that he did in the 1980s. He was the luckiest
president
in the history of this country.
Exactly.
But he ended up, as usual with all Democrats, their policies end up destroying everything that was good.
And when I try to tell this to people, I get called an idiot. I've got friends of mine, people who are Republicans, that say, like I have a cousin, he used to be Republican, now he's a Democrat. Back then, he voted for Clinton because he thought Dole was too old. And now they want to vote for Obama because they said, oh, it's time for a change. And I know Republicans that are going to sit the election out because they don't like either one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Carries, you just refer them to us. Because
I would love to get some of my friends on the phone with you guys.
Because what I love to do whenever I get hold of one of these people is I love to stick my fist right through the microphone, grab them by the tongue, and wrap their tongue around their whole face there.
Now, folks, we just brought the news guy up. He's going to
hello, news guy.
Doing
hello,
the remainder.
I've been keeping you busy this week.
Yeah, what? Yeah. Hey, everybody should check out the website from now on. It's been revamped, and there's a lot of articles up there. Every day there's news articles and stuff, and one of the new aspects of it is Cheryl's cutting comments.
There you go.
Cheryl will be a contributing writer to the Right Perspectives website, and you'll be able to catch her cutting comments on the website.
There you go.
Thank you, news guy.
Yeah, well, thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
And news guy does an awful lot of work for the show.
Oh, plenty.
And by, he gave us.
Hopefully someday we'll be able to get John to start putting his archives of all of his different files up there too.
Yeah, I got to get some of the lies that we're just losing all the jobs and none are coming back here.
Right.
If we have time, the seed, before the show ends, I want to go over some economic stats that totally blow that out of the water. And in fact, we've actually picked up jobs from other companies hiring Americans. They come to the United States because the United States is a very sound, regardless of what you hear from the liberal Democrats, always whining that everything is wrong. This is a very solid democracy. And it's a stable government for the most part. And companies will invest in countries that have stable governments. And that's why you have people from Germany coming over, setting up new Mercedes-Benz factories and hiring Americans and Toyota and places like that. So it's a two-way street, folks. Don't believe that propaganda that we're losing jobs. We also gain jobs.
We've gained a lot of jobs. And what they always leave out in these articles that the drive-by media puts together, they always leave out the unions. The unions are not going out there fighting for jobs for the workers. The unions are just looking to raise dues and to hold on to the money and to contribute to their own little parties and celebration. They are big contributors.
Yeah. Well, the leadership is just,
to the Democrats. They have to go out there and fight for jobs. They have to go out there to say we must have training for our workers to build up their skills so that they deserve higher pay. The unions have only been looking for corruption to suit themselves and line their pockets. There is this bill that's been going around. Eugene McCarthy is totally against it. He wrote a op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal where he said, "I am against my own party." And this comes from a former presidential candidate. The unions want an open vote. This way they could see who was voting in favor of the union, who was voting against the union. This is very dangerous. Unions have to go out there and get jobs for the workers.
Yeah.
That is what unions were for. And why their membership has gone down tremendously is because they have gone away from their main
focus.
Yeah,
at one time, unions were needed in this country because there were tremendous abuses. And that now it's just become a political arm of the Democrat Party. And it sounds like the 1930s all over again. If you don't vote the way that we want, we're coming at you with bats. What the hell is this?
It does reek of some sort of corruption there, because it can be used in a very bad way.
Yeah. Well, the article that I wanted to read about this corruption on Wall Street and this dangerous Democrat Party, I'll save for a little bit, and we'll we'll continue the discussion here. Carries, did you want to finish your thought?
Yeah, I just wanted to say goodnight. I love everything that's been said here, and
you tell them that they're not allowed to call you an idiot. Cheryl from New Jersey says so.
Okay. You know, there's a couple of my friends. I would, and one in particular, I would love. He's a good friend of mine, but he's an extreme liberal. I would love to get him on the phone with John and you. I don't think he'd last 5 minutes, but he put up a good fight. By the way,
I hope John's blood pressure could take it.
By the way, I heard that a soldier back from Iraq had said to a Chelsea Clinton, there was only three things he was afraid of: Osama, Obama, and your mama.
Yeah.
Good night, guys.
Yeah.
Good night.
And we may have more to fear for her, because I'm sure that you've heard, News Guy, that there's a possibility that Joe Biden may step aside next week, claiming he's got health problems, and Hillary's just going to step right in. And I'll bet you that's what that meeting was last week with Bill Clinton in Harlem.
Well, you know, I'll go out on the limb here, and I'll say that I don't think that he's going to step down, or they're going to do that, because
I'm with you, News Guy.
Such a huge balloon of burden of trauma for the Obama campaign. And then there was this woman this week who was introducing Biden to the crowd, and she was really laying into Sarah Palin, calling her some sort of a fluff ball and all of this. So I think that they are drawing the wagons around Biden there, and they'll just keep him on as like some sort of a comedy relief during the campaign.
Well, what I think, News Guy, I think that they are really seriously considering getting rid of Biden, but when they try to see if Hillary is the one who is going to fill the shoes, she doesn't pick up that excitement that Sarah Palin got with that announcement, because, you know, people just react, oh, you know, Biden really isn't anybody, and they're not reacting favorably. It isn't a big wave of applause. Oh, yeah. Please bring on Hillary. In other words, they're trying to see how will the public react, and they're not getting the reaction that they really are anticipating. So it shows very bad judgment on the part of the abominable one.
Yeah, it will. Yeah. If she has to step in, and suddenly, you know, he steps aside, it's going to be so obvious why. To insult the American people saying, well, I'm sick, so I have to step aside. It's just going to look like another Clinton power play. And it's also, as the News Guy said earlier, when I was on the phone with him earlier today, talking about the show for tonight, it's going to show another lack of poor judgment on the part of Obama, just like he had terrible judgment with the war in Iraq. And I hope the Republicans exploit this, but the Republicans are so inept and so politically tone deaf, or they don't have the guts, and they don't have any war room or anybody to jump all over this and put it all together and combine all of the things that Obama, I almost said Osama, was wrong about. They should put all of this together and you know, show that this is a pattern.
Yes, I agree. You know, we got to be the room, more war room. We've got to be the war.
Yeah.
And right, that part of the job is left to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this is what gets to me, News Guy. The economy, the stock market, was all in the headlines. People's 401ks, a very big insurance company. People have life insurance, property insurance, automobile insurance, annuities, you name it. And Lehman Brothers, who had been in existence for so many years prior to the time that there was Wall Street. So you have all of these big headlines. And what do you hear about Obama? Fundraising, millions of dollars. Oh, he raised more money than anybody else.
Some money.
The money is rolling in. How come the bad times, the bad headlines, all of this that people are scared, I forgot to mention gas prices, all of this that people are hurting financially, how come the money is just rolling right in for Obama? It doesn't make any sense. It's a lie. He's getting money from these terrorist groups. He's getting money from all of these outside forces, not Americans, but from outside of America, because the Americans are holding on to their dollar. And even if I wanted to make a great big contribution to John McCain, I can't afford to make a big contribution to John McCain. The money...
He'll take a little one.
He will take a little one. The money is such a big item, and that Obama keeps saying, oh, the money is rolling in. Something is wrong. I demand an investigation. Let's investigate that. Let's investigate who it was who got into the email of Sarah Palin, because it comes from the Obama campaign. When he was running for U.S. Senator, not state senator, but U.S. Senator, the guy who was in power, Fitzgerald, his divorce papers became unsealed. Unsealed. Now, who would stand to benefit from unsealing his divorce papers? It would be Obama. And this is why he is totally abominable. Yeah. And all of these shenanigans, I say, come from Obama, and I demand an investigation right here and right now.
But they'll take all the money they can from these Hollywood creeps who are getting divorced like we cook French fries. They got a different lover every day, cheating on each other. So it's, you know,
my money and I need it now.
Yeah, I'm not sending it to Obama. That's for sure.
Just to bring up some things that you guys were talking about before with the anchor babies. And the problem of, because I was thinking about it when you're talking about the anchor babies, and I do agree that we gotta change this law about having where a baby is born in America and that's what makes it an American. But it really brings up a very weird dynamic, because then how do you define an American? If you say that the parents have to be American, well, then you're a racist. So how do you define?
I will tell you,
American?
I will tell you, news guy. You just said, oh, you know, you're going to be called a racist. So you're going to be called a racist. That's it. That's it. You have
if they
to,
don't find that reason, they'll
you,
find another.
Yeah, you have to put that law through. A little baby, cute, sweet, adorable, wonderful little kitty is born in here in America. No social security card, no benefits, no citizenship. That is the way it is. And why should they receive all of this? Here, they're going to close down Yankee Stadium. I was reading about Babe Ruth. When he was a little boy, he had parents. I'm wondering, why was he in an orphanage? Why was he in a foster home? They couldn't afford him. They couldn't afford to raise their own son.
And they said he was uncontrollable.
So they put him in a foster home, in an orphanage, is what, you know, whatever they had called it. They owned a business, they had a bar, they looked to earn a living, but they couldn't afford to raise him. Well, we, the taxpayer, cannot afford to raise these cute, sweet, adorable, wonderful little kitties who are being born one after another and flooding these hospitals and our school system with all of these, just by their number.
And you know what you could do, Cheryl? We can, news guy, we should always remember this. Look, you know, when you're on the job and the job has certain rules, and all of a sudden, little by little, you see the employees trying to take advantage, and they go too far, the boss always eventually sends out a memo. From now on, this practice is no longer in effect because people took advantage of it, and the only way we can stop it is by eliminating the whole program. That's what we should be allowed to do when it comes to these people crossing the border and dropping their babies. We should tell them, listen, you took advantage of a good thing, and now we have a right to get some control of it. We're a sovereign nation, and this is the law we're going to lay down, and we have a right to change that law to protect our own country, and that's what we're going to do. Go ahead and call us a racist if you want. You're a racist against our country for thinking that you can just snub your nose at us and take advantage of something like that, and we're not going to do anything about it, and you can just walk all over our laws and our traditions. So you're the racist. We've got to turn the tables on them.
Maybe because I'm just trying to think of, like, different... You're kind
Steve,
of
by the way,
about,
news guy, Steve of Manhattan is up with us. Steve, anytime you want to jump in, go
Hello,
ahead.
Hello, Steve.
Oh, hey, Steve, I wanted to... It's very good you called in. I wanted to bring up some other stuff, too, involving all of this stuff, because it's like what happened back in 1992 with Pat Buchanan. Now, Pat Buchanan, when he was running for president, he was talking very strongly about all of this stuff with the immigration. And what happened? They blamed him as to be a racist. What happened to him when he was talking about the UN? They said he's an isolationist. He's something like the guy, he's like a Lindbergh guy. All of this, they vilified him. They made him out to be a kook. And now that the problem has not been taken care of, and we have a situation on our hands where pretty drastic measures have to be taken into account to rectify the problem. Now everybody is turning around and saying to Pat, oh, Pat, you were so right about that back in 1992. I wish we could go back in time and make you the president and we wouldn't have this problem. But, you know, the same thing is happening now with Ron Paul. This week, Ron Paul was on the Glenn Beck show. Glenn Beck is a very strong conservative, very pro-Israel, very socially conservative as well, very Christian. He had Ron Paul on. He's saying basically, well, you know, Ron, you were right about all the things you were talking about with the economy. And they're talking about all of this stuff that's going on right now. And Ron Paul was being very drastic about it. I mean, not very drastic, but being very straightforward about it. You know, and the things that he was talking about with it, where the Constitution is not being really enforced with this. I mean, the Congress is really the only body that has the ability to spend our money. But this week we saw that nobody with the Congress was not spending our money. It was all these other groups. The federal government was not really involved with that. And, you know, and he was talking about things that were going on that, he was asked straight out, do you think it's 1929, do you think it's 1979, or do you think it's 1989?
And what did he say?
Like 1989, like with the end of the Soviet Union. And Ron Paul said it's more like the end of it's like more like 1989 with the end of the Soviet Union.
I'm glad he said that, and I'll tell you why, because so many times he comes off as very negative. When he discusses all the problems that are wrong with the economy, and of course, no matter what the times are, there's always negatives. You always have positives, but at the same token, you always have negatives. What Ron Paul is very good at is discussing all the negatives, pointing them out and showing why they are bad for the economy, how the economy suffers, how the consumer suffers, how the investor suffers, how the person who was trying to save suffers. He goes into all the extrapolations about everything that is negative. What he does not point out, what he leaves out, is that people do not want to continue along in a state of suffering. They want to correct the problem that they recognize is a problem. They want to find out what can we do to solve the problem and put us on the right path to getting the good things, all the positive things that the economy can produce. So I am very, very glad to hear that he said 1989.
Yeah, because, you know, what we're looking at is something that is, and I don't want to sound like an alarmist, but it is something that we do really need to talk about in some sort of a really honest manner about it, because I mean, this was something that I came across back in March of 2008. And I kind of, when I read it, I was like, oh, come on, this is crazy. This is about a conspiracy theory and all of this. Now, actually, during the time when Greenspan was still in the head.
I am so totally against him. Right. He has caused so much problem. It is he should be in jail.
Right.
Yes. Okay, good. Go ahead.
The thing is, like Greenspan, what he did, he removed what's called this M3 money supply. Now, I don't know what M3 money supply is, but
Milton Friedman had done tremendous studies on money supply, and of course, he was a Ronald Reagan economist. Milton Friedman.
And so, like, what happened with the M3, that basically lets you know how much money is being printed by the government. And when the government stopped saying how much M3 money is out there, that started to raise some red flags with people saying, okay, well, what's going on here? The government can print as much money as it wants, and we will have no idea about how much money is in circulation, so we don't know the actual worth of it because it's not really based on anything
but
except
you have
matter
to know,
of trust. And now
you
that
have
matter
to know
of trust
what is backing it. You know, is there gold backing it? Or there are many different things that back it up, that give it its strength. But that is, you know, a whole course of study over the course of months over at these fancy schmancy colleges.
Yeah, Greenberg right. was well, Greenberg
the,
was a
you
good
know the thing is that we have so much money in circulation right now, and we have no idea how much there is because Greenspan removed the M3 money supply factor. So we have no idea how much money is in circulation this week. We saw like $500 billion being flooded and buying this and helping out that, and it was thrown into the international markets. Every country in the world was involved with this. And it's like, where is this money coming from? It has no value in anything.
That...
It doesn't have a value on gold. There's no way that Fort Knox has enough gold to supply all this money.
That is why I'm so against Greenspan. Because he has done so much.
You know, he was good when he first started out. And then I don't know what the hell happened. This guy just went off the deep end.
He got together with Clinton, and the two of them conspired because the two of them eliminated that Glass-Steagall Act. That's what made these brokerage houses investment banks. Investment banks and commercial banks, and they were both in everything. And you cannot be in everything. Because of Greenspan, that is why the SEC lost its power. The SEC came into being in the 1930s because the stock market had to be fortified so that people would have credibility with the stock market and they would go back in and invest money in the stock market. But Greenspan brought down the powers of the SEC. That's why that became a big issue this week with McCain saying he would fire the head of the SEC. There was so much involved with the SEC. You have to come out with a prospectus every time you have a new issue. Who was involved with these prospecti for these mortgages? You had lawyers, you had accountants, you had brokerage houses. Nobody had any ethics and nobody had any idea what was being put into these mortgages. There was no oversight.
Yeah. Well, everybody does everything for, you know, these the type of people who would do that kind of thing. They think that nothing is ever going to happen, that we're too strong of a country, the economy's too strong, and they can get away with doing what they want for their own benefit. But anyway, Steve, did you want to jump in there?
Cheryl, you got to call 1-800-GO-PAC-GO.
Go. I remember when you would call yeah. Bob Grant, and you would start off by saying, "Go, Pat, go."
And, immediately get dumped, even though the
yes.
we used to beat the seven-second delay many times.
That's
many times.
Right. Yeah. And Larry Kudlow, he would look to cut you off week after week also. You would come on with different names.
Yeah. That was almost like a Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
And
well, now it's no longer Go Pack Go. It's campaignforliberty.com.
Hello. There you go. There you go.
And I'll tell you something. Jorge Bush a few years ago wanted to sell the our ports to the Muslims, and they called McPsycho, McCrazy, McCain a traitor. I'm going to say it right here tonight. John McCain is going to be the next president of the United States. I basically laid it out last week. This presidential election is going to be decided along racial lines. There'll be a certain percentage of whites that will vote for Obama, but when it comes down to it, it will fall along racial lines. And that's the most important thing people should know right now, is that you're going to have a guy in there, the presidency, who's really not on your side. I know McCain has given all these speeches in front of these Hispanic groups. He's lying to them. He's telling them other things, and then he's coming out, and he's saying just the opposite on the outside. So they're just, both of them will say anything to get elected. We know that. And unfortunately, because of that, the issues will never be debated in these presidential elections. That's why I caution people to really look at their congressional people and the House of Representatives. Every seat is up. Also, there's a numerous amount of senatorial seats that are up. Hey, folks, if you find a good immigration reformer in that barrel who happens to be in your congressional district, you have to go all out to support these individuals, because I'm telling you, they are, I'm under the opinion, they're looking to accelerate the mass influx of third worlders in this country. The money, the big money, obviously, is on Obama. It looks like Cheryl was bringing up all this money coming in. She wants to know where it's coming from. Of course, intelligent people always just don't take, oh, he raised a lot of money. Like Cheryl's intelligence, she wants to know where the hell that money's coming from. A lot of that money, folks, is coming from prominent business people. Republican, Democrat, believe me, they don't give a damn about party affiliation. Like that psycho David Rockefeller said years ago why he was doing business with the communist Russians. He says, I couldn't care less about ideology. All I'm worried about is money and them paying their bills. And that's the big money is going to Obama, obviously, because they feel he can accelerate it quicker than McCain. To me, this is a tie race between the both of them when it comes to the illegal invasion of America. Just look at this individual, this guy. I bring this guy up numerous times on the Bob Grant Show, Mayor Louis Barletta of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Now, he's running for Congress. He's running for the House of Representatives. He's most likely going to win that race. This man saw his city, his town. Now, we live in New York City. We don't even know how many people in New York City. They say 8 million. I say there's 10 million people in this city. There's got to be well over a million illegals at least. He saw his little town of a city of about 20,000 be invaded by over 10,000 illegal aliens. And this man did something about it. He took them on. He went after them. The courts were of course, what I call the courts, it's a fix. The fix is in with the courts. They try to stop every law that him and his city council passed to get the invaders out of there. Folks, his little example of what that man did in that city is now being used all over the country by other mayors, other town councils to get rid of their illegal invasion problem. Now, we know there's millions of Americans who are against this, who want to do something about it. But this is where you start. You have to ask question to these people who do these shows, these Republican talk radio shows. They all call themselves independents. They're propagandists for the Republic. Ask them, why isn't Mayor Louis Barletta of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, why are you bringing this guy up? Why aren't you talking about him? Why aren't you talking about supporting him and getting him money and having this guy win? Because there's plenty of other people just like Mr. Barletta all around this country, and hopefully some of them are going to win the Congress. And they're going to stop these freaks from passing amnesty. They're going to be all over them with the open border thing. But as we see, they come here legally too. They come here with the visas. They overstay their visas. Then they're in here. They get here legally. They become illegal because they overstayed visas. Cheryl brought the anchor babies. Excellent point when you bring up what they're doing, the way they're bankrupting the all the hospitals. But, folks, they're getting that citizenship. They're American citizens. As soon as they become an American citizen, even if they're a baby, they can actually – they can't do it as a baby, but they can eventually file the petition to have the whole town, the whole – whatever you want to call it, of their relatives all coming to the United States. It's anchor babies create a chain immigration policy, which is also flooding America.
Even non-relatives, they call relatives, and that's how they come into the country, because they say, oh, this one's an aunt, that one's a cousin, this one was married to this one. They don't even bother to get married, but they're all family. All
right,
of them
right.
are family.
Plenty of them are lying. They're not really related. They're just using that to get into the country, just like they lie about refugee status, where they claim they'll be prosecuted or killed in their countries. How many have we found out are just plain, bold-faced lies just to enter the United States of America? And, folks, you will get an Obama as the president of the United States. When the demographics change, and the only thing that's going to save this race is demographics, the American people are going to vote along racial lines. You just wait and see on election night. There will be that percentage of whites who will vote for Obama. It will not be enough to put them over the top, but it will show you that in the future, that when the demographics no longer are on your side, you will be turning over not only all the gold in Fort Knox, all the gold in the Federal Reserve Bank down in Wall Street, all that plus the most awesome military arsenal on the face of the world and the earth has ever known, over to the third world, simple by an election and a vote just strictly on demographics.
It's a scary scenario, but news guy, we got a call back from our friend Don in Pennsylvania. He wants to know if you can get that guy, that Mayo Coletta that you said you
Coletta.
Were talking about. He wants to get him on the show, so he wants to know if maybe you can get a hold of him. Steve, how do you spell his name?
It's B-A-R.
L-O-T-T-A.
L-E-T-T-A, Barletta.
Barletta.
All you got to do is really Google
Hazleton.
And you'll get all the information on him.
Yeah, Hazleton, okay. Pennsylvania.
You go to his website. It's an excellent website. And he's running in the 9th Congressional District. I believe it's Monroe County, Carbon County. So there's like at least 3 counties he totally encompasses, plus Lackawanna, I believe, is a part of Lackawanna County. If you're familiar with the names I'm saying, if you're from Pennsylvania, you probably know these counties. It's in that area, Scranton area. And he's also the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. This man is a true patriot, folks. He took him on, and it's a model for what he did over there for a lot of the people who are now copycatting what he did to fight this invasion. He saw what went on. He saw how crime went up, how the hospitals, the edge of school systems were overburdened, prisons, jails. When they would arrest the illegals in Hazleton, he would call the feds. Hey, these people are in here, but how about deporting them? They would never come up there to deport them. And the 14th Amendment, we know, mentions about people being born in the United States, but it's not a very big line. It's only a few lines when it's mentioned. It says within the jurisdiction of the United States of America, they become babes. But this was put in the 14th Amendment. Obviously, the 13th Amendment freed the slaves. The 14th Amendment and the jurisdiction of the United States really meant that the freed slaves had become American citizens. There is no way that the people who wrote that 14th Amendment had any intention of letting anybody come bum rush into this country, drop a baby like an assembly line and become citizens. No, it's a bastation of the law. 14th Amendment is also the equal protection of the law, which they conveniently disregard with their race quotas and everything else that goes on.
And news guy, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, that's a great idea. I'll definitely get him on, try to get him on. And you know what's going on over in California, too, with all the stuff that they're going
through.
Here we have San Francisco is a sanctuary city, and the mayor over there, Gavin Newsom, who everybody probably remembers about the gay rights issue, he is now battling the sanctuary city concept.
And so it's very unusual to see this, but even he's turning around on this. But, you know, there's like a whole thing going on over there in California.
As long as he's not bending over.
you don't want to do that.
He doesn't look too cool himself. Yeah. He looks a little bit like one of those double-gated swisheroos.
But, you know, the thing is, like, when we're talking about all this, we really have to get... It's almost like everything always breaks down along party lines, Republican versus conservative. You know, we were talking before on the show about this anti-Ahmadinejad rally that broke down along political lines.
Yeah, what a shame.
It's like people can't even fight an enemy, a real flesh and blood enemy, as violent as with his rhetoric is. People can't even get together cross-party lines on something like that. And it's just real shame.
Once Hillary found out that she wasn't going to be the center of attention, then she pulled out. So
right.
Yes.
Right. But, you know, that's kind of like what I'm drawing it into this, because now, like with the immigration issue, it falls into Republican versus conservative. And, you know, what we're really dealing with is not only the people of America, but like the continuation of this country at this point.
Yeah.
Well, a news guy, if you go to the website vdare.com and you look at all the writers there, you could call them and get them on the show. They'll tell you about the myth of this great Hispanic vote that decides all these elections. It's nonsense. You had what was his name? The son of the football coach down in Virginia. George Allen lost his senatorial seat. There ain't enough Hispanics down there to throw that election. He lost big, and he lost because of unfortunately Republicans were out of favor at the time. And the same thing with Rick Santorum in Pennsylvania back in 06. He lost in Pennsylvania. He lost pretty big election, but he lost not because of Hispanic votes. There's not enough Hispanics in Pennsylvania to throw an election, and the ones in there mostly are in there illegally. Most of them moved to the Poconos from New York City, probably not even registered. And that's not enough vote and power to throw an election.
Steve, I wanted to ask you something.
Go ahead.
You said the Republicans were out of favor then. How come with all these scandals that are popping up with the Democrats, with Charles Rangel, you have Tony Seminario just indicted for taking bribes here. You have, what's his name, Fitzpatrick, in the mayor of
Detroit.
Detroit.
Michigan.
You got William Jefferson with his $90,000 in the freezer.
The freezer
the
freeze.
Real cold cash.
Yeah. You've got Spitzer in New York had to resign. You got, what's his name, Corzine in New Jersey has been under scrutiny since the day he was in office. Trouble.
He's been in bed.
How come the Democrats never fall out of favor?
Well, they do fall out of favor.
Yeah?
In 94 they did. You are right, John. They don't fall out of favor, of course, because...
It takes is one Republican to be in trouble for a sex scandal, and the Republicans become the minority again.
There is a bias in the news coverage, because if you're talking about that guy with the wide stance, I mean, we heard about that nonstop for like 2 weeks minimum in the mainstream media, and every little aspect of that scandal was exposed and overanalyzed by the media. But yet, this guy, McGreevy, he puts his gay lover as the head of Homeland Security. His gay lover heads off, flees off for a sanctuary somewhere. And we never hear anything about that, except when this guy comes out and says, I'm a gay American.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's a news blackout. We could start a 24-hour news station with all the scandals of the Democrats. We know that John could be the anchor for that one. I mean, we could do that nonstop. But the bottom line is, and I'll give you what I feel happened. In 06, you had Bush pushing amnesty. You had the Muslims. They wanted the Muslims to buy the ports. Americans were starting to really fall out of favor with Bush, and they took it out on the Republicans in Congress. But it was a little bit of a bastardized election cycle we had, because Bush wins in 2000. 2002, usually in the off year after the party that wins the presidency, usually loses a few seats. But that wasn't the case because of 9/11, the American people felt more secure with the Republicans. If you remember, Republicans actually did pretty good in 2002 and were able to take over the Senate again. Remember,
got rid of Daschle.
And that, I think, actually turned the election cycle around just a little bit. And then when you had the thing with selling the ports to the Muslims, Dubai, where all the Al-Qaeda money goes through that country. I don't even want to call it a country. And the thing with the amnesty, American people were getting mad. But it was a little bit of a different election cycle we had this year. I mean, these last several years because of 9/11. But news guy, you are right. It's a news blackout with the media, obviously, with all these scandals. But I tell you what. You know what? You're better off having Charlie Rangel sit in that chairmanship of that tax committee, because then you can go wild on him anytime he tries to raise taxes. Republicans go wild on
him. I am a gay American.
Let him stay there.
Yeah.
Let him stay in there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? The thing is, it doesn't ever seem to affect the Democrats.
But no.
Yeah, Obama, with all of this scandal going on with Charlie Rangel, Obama pulls ahead this week. Let one Republican...
John.
Let one Republican come up with a scandal, and all of a sudden, the Republicans are thrown out of office all over the country, and the Democrats now have a 30-seat lead in the Congress.
In the House of Representatives.
Yeah, in the House of Representatives.
Right. But you know what? I wouldn't worry too much about that right now, because these are individual elections. I think it's really going to turn in the favor of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives. I don't know if they're going to take the House over, but it's not going to be no slaughter. I think they're going to pick seats up. You just wait and see, because this top of the ticket, this Obama ticket, is going to also bring down the congressional, the senatorial seats. You just wait and see. Unfortunately, of course, you got a guy running the Republican side. It doesn't help you cause much, but that's what I see happening.
Well, it's not going to happen as long as they're successful in turning everything upside down with this thing on Wall Street and making it sound like it's a Republican problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, the fact is that if you look at what Obama did with Fannie Mae,
yeah.
I mean, he was number two in the line of financial handouts, and from Fannie Mae. And this guy is supposed to be the change.
Well,
this guy is no change. He's like the part of a corporate machine.
And picking Biden also shows that he went with the old entrenched ways of doing things.
Yeah, well, this is why Democrats want government to be so big, because everything that they control in the government, they can use for their own benefit.
But you know what, John? We're in New York, and we're really not going to see meat and potatoes commercials that are going to come on. But believe me, the links to Fannie Mae and stuff, any of the states that are borderline, what they call battleground states, they're going to run those ads in those states. They're going to be played on the radio. They're going to be played on TV. We're not going to be privy to that because we're in New York City. It's a done deal. Obama's going to win. But even though you don't know, upstate
New York,
you
know what?
The
Republicans are too inept, Steve. Unfortunately, I'm not very confident, because look, as soon as this thing broke, what happens? John McCain was ahead by 2, 4, 6 points in every poll. All of a sudden, this thing happens on Wall Street. It drops 500 points. You have the trouble with the financial institutions. And because the Republicans allow the Democrats to get the jump on them with the propaganda that it's the Republican scandal, everything's turned around and Obama is ahead in all of the polls now again. In other words, McCain not only lost, but Obama gained, which means that it's a double gain, because people... For some reason, if a Republican is in the White House, they get the blame. But when Clinton was in the White House, he got the credit for nothing he did.
Well, we know, because the media was in bed with him. But the bottom line is this, John, the national polls, don't get too caught up in them. I'm going to tell you why. I know you have to react to them because you do a show.
Well, I keep an eye on the Electoral College.
Right, that's the more important thing. Believe me, that hasn't changed much. The Gallup poll that came out, these other polls, national polls. Remember one thing. In the national polling, if you could remove California and New York out of that national polling and give it to Obama, and the bottom line is this, McCain will win the election anyway. That's to me is the bottom line, is state by state. If you look at each individual state's polling that's going on, you'll see that Benedict Arnold is going to be the next president.
Yeah, but you know,
States.
Some people don't some people don't learn any lesson. Look what's happened to the great state of Michigan under a Democrat governor and this pig Fitzpatrick that's going to jail. Both liberals. And yet Michigan is in play for Obama, or he's ahead by 1 or 2 points?
Yeah, but John,
some people are hopeless. And you say that this is going to be an election along racial lines. Oh, yeah? I wish it was so, because white people are still 75% of the population in this country. But Obama is ahead in all the polls by 1 or 2 points with a mostly white population. Our right. biggest problem in this country are that white people are lackeys and morons. The other side votes one way. White people, with their misplaced sense of guilt or whatever it is, half of the white people in this country are a bunch of liberal lefties.
Well, I mean, you just nailed it there when you said a lot of the whites are morons. We know that. But the the bottom line is, even if you look at that Michigan's poll, Obama is not even over 50%. And it's really, if you look at it closely, I mean, people go back to the, I believe it was back in the early 80s, the famous, it was a governor election that Mayor Bradley was running for governor against Dujamian, and they had Bradley's black. They had him up by 10 points, and he lost by 10 points. People were lying to the pollsters back then, saying they were going to, because they didn't want to be perceived as whatever, you know, because they're not voting for the black guy. But that's in this polling now too, John. There are people who are saying they're going to vote for Obama who have absolutely no intention of voting
for him.
Well,
you know what scares me, Steve and this guy? These polls have been pretty damn accurate the last few election cycles. They're almost right on every time.
You really think so?
Yeah. The only time they were really off the last time I saw was when they were trying to boost Jimmy Carter and said that he was actually tied with Ronald Reagan, and Jimmy Carter ended up winning one state, his own.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought maybe one national poll really had it back in 2004. This is how close the elections were in 2000. It came down to Florida. 2004 came down to Ohio. You know what I'm saying? If Herman Munster wins Ohio, he would have been the president of the United States. And the same thing with the wooden Indian. If he would win Florida, he would have been the president. It came down to one state in those two elections. These are the closest elections we've ever had in a long time.
Yeah.
But I don't really believe Obama's going to win Ohio. He's not going to win Ohio. I don't believe he's going to win Michigan either. And I really believe that McCain could actually win Pennsylvania too.
Well,
and that'll be it.
Pennsylvania and Michigan seem to be lost causes.
Because you've got too many brothers
there.
Look at this state polling right now of those two states. You will not see Obama over 50%. I don't believe he's
going to win. Well, I want to see McCain ahead by 3 or 4 points in each of them. That's when I'll feel better.
Right.
You know, the way that they say it, it's always a long way to November, Jim. And,
right.
You know, it still is. It's still like almost 2 months. And it's going to be like this. It's going to be a very, very close roller coaster ride up until the very election. And I think that, like what you were talking about there, Steve, you know, in 2000, it was February, it was Florida. In 2004 was Ohio. I think right now, I don't know, but it kind of seems like it's going to be in 2008. It's going to be Florida. It's going to be Ohio. It's going to be Pennsylvania. It's going to be Michigan. There are going to be so many disputes over these elections and the tallies, and people are going to be screaming about Diebold this and hanging Chad that and overseas votes.
Broken computers.
It's just going to. I could see that this will. You know, the 2000. It took a month for it to be resolved, and finally the Supreme Court had to settle it. I could see something like that happening.
Yeah, and
more intense.
Right. Anything short of a win by Obama, you're going to have complaints. And you know what? All the voting fraud complaints, they always happen in states controlled by Democrats.
Yeah.
But no one ever says anything.
Steve, right. I want to ask you, and then I'll get ready to leave. Steve, why is it that George Bush, who had two elections, his father only won once, he won twice, why is it that he became such a weak, lame duck in his second session. What's your opinion?
My opinion is I just believe, even if you look in George Bush's first term in 2000 to 2004, he went along with a lot of the Democratic's programs there. He went along with McCain-Feingold, the nonsense of cutting out free speech and campaigns. That's basically what it came down to.
That's what it does.
Right. And also he went along with Teddy Kennedy's
education
bill.
No child left behind.
Right. Which was total nonsense. This is all in his first term. I remember John getting mad about this. Remember when it was deadlocked, 50-50 in the Senate, and they turned the control over to the Senate to the Democrats in 2001, even though it was a 50-50 tie. They turned over the control of the chairmanships to them. I remember Big John from Staten Island getting mad about that. And to me, he was ready to fold on any account. You know what it is when you
wasn't
really
that jumping Jim Jeffords?
Right, exactly. He switched parties too. He's the one who gave him the 50-50 when he did that. That clown. But he really was. I mean, he's just a Republican, but he was a flaming liberal.
Oh yeah.
From Rhode Island, I
think after that, when he jumped, the Republicans won the majority, and then he became the minority after he switched.
Well, that was after 2002.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right. And you did have Senator Byrd stopping amnesty in 2001 because he was the chairman of one of those committees where he refused to let the amnesty even come up for a vote. He did what's called in the Senate pocketing the legislation. That means the chairman will take the legislation and not even let it come up for a vote. That's how powerful those chairmen are, and that's why you always want to have someone who shares, you know, your beliefs and your patriotic beliefs of America. Well, they could destroy this country, I mean, once and for all, you know. But getting back to the Gallup poll and all the money going to Obama, you know, like I've said before, it looks like they want to accelerate, the massive influx of third worlders into America, and that's why they're betting all that money. That money has to be coming from prominent business people, and you can only make individually a $2,000 check. Anything more than that, then you're running into election violations and laws where you're...
That's why they set up other types of organizations. That's why they call those groups different names. But they're all channeling the funds to that one individual.
Yeah. So. Hey, Cheryl, not to change the subject or anything like that, but I have Brian here instant messaging me, and he would like to come on and speak to you. Would that be okay before you leave?
Sure,
why not?
Okay, hold on.
I wonder if Brian, I hope Brian's feeling better.
Yes, I believe that the doctor said that he should be talking with some good friends, so I'm ringing Brian up right now, and he should be coming on in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, well, he's got friends here, that's for sure.
And he's just ringing, and I don't know why he's not picking up right now. He should be there. Hello, Brian, are you there?
Maybe you got to call collect.
Ah, hello, Brian.
Hello.
Oh,
there he is. There he is. Okay, that's my knight of the right perspective. That's my fellow in Australia. Yes, I took
Hello, my lady.
Well, I want you to know, Mr. Brian, I took your photo to the office, and I showed it to a select few, because, you know, there are some people that, they don't get to see your photo, but there are some people whose opinions do matter in the office, and I want to make sure that they are well aware of Brian of Australia. And I said, this is my bold, brave knight from Australia.
Well, we're going to have to make a new movie, The New Life of Brian.
That's right. And they were all impressed, and they were all saying, what a handsome man. And they were saying, he is Brian of Australia? Wow, he is really somebody. So I want you to know, with a select few in the office, you are a very important person.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Thank you very much.
People are fascinated.
People are fascinated. You bet they are. You bet they are.
Well, and standing in front of that tractor, he looks like a real Marlboro man.
That's right. That's right. Big, tough guy. Big tough guy.
You feeling better, Brian? I hope you're feeling better, Brian.
Oh, I was pretty sick last week. But,
yeah.
I've got a lot of good doctors and family, and I'll pull through it. I'd like to say thanks to John for the email, and you and Frank sent me the book, which was just great.
Yeah, well, anytime, you know, you want
to... From Baghdad to America.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad he sent that to you. And, you know, keep your mind occupied for a while. And, you know, anytime you want to send an email, say hello, you know, I'm always ready to write back and stay in contact, you know.
And I'm always your lady, and you are my knight. The knight of the right perspective. You bet. You bet.
Cheryl,
I'm listening. Are
you in love with your lady, or is it that's not a done thing?
Well, I don't understand the question. What's the question?
I'll say it again.
Yeah.
I said, can you be in love with your lady, or that's part of protocol?
Well,
we're
all one big family. We are all one big family here on the Right Perspective, and we're all together. So we all need one another, and we all have to get our message across, and we all work together. So we are one big happy family. So you are part of the family, and we're all with you, and you're all with us.
Well, thanks for that, Cheryl. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That book, it seemed to come at the right time. If I hadn't pulled through, I suppose it would have broke my wife's heart. It would have arrived, and I wouldn't have been here to receive it. And, you know, John, I'm a guy who probably doubts all the God stuff, but, you know, that's like divine intervention somewhere along the line.
Yeah, well, it must have had more plans for you, so.
Well, I was thinking that. I mean, you know, that happened, and, you know, the book came, and it, yeah, so maybe it's just wasn't the right time, and my neighbour come over and help me, and which was just a coincidence too, and so yeah, I'm ready to kick on.
Oh, that's good. Good to hear.
Serious ways.
What's that, news guy?
You know what they say? God works in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
Apparently so.
Yeah, well, you know, you always got the, always have their friends here, so, you know, and you ever get, always think of, you know, who's looking out for you and who's interested in how you're doing and everything. So you always have friends, so, you know, whenever
you... Well, I appreciate that, John, and,
you're part of...
Probably appreciate it more than, you know, I could ever put in an email or say on the phone.
Yeah. Well, we're all in a great big battle at the current time. There are many things going on, and through the airwaves, we have a tremendous influence. And this way, you're part of that process of influencing the major thought and the major people who have to protect America, to preserve, defend, and protect. And this election is coming up. We have big things to do. We always say battle on, patriots, battle on. So you're a part of a very major effort. Everything you do is important. Everything that you contribute to making this show, these airwaves, important all around the world. This is a major accomplishment. You should be very proud of yourself for that. You're a part of a major effort.
Yes, a regular contributor to the Right Perspective.
That's right. That's right.
You know, we.
I feel like if I hadn't pulled through, I would have let the team down.
You would have let the team down. That's the word.
Well, you know, just glad you're, you know, you feel better. And don't forget, you got people here. You can always email. And the news guy, you can always call. I can't call you, but, you know. So even if we're not on the air, you can always call the news guy, and he can call me and let me know, and we can always get down to the studio and talk.
Yeah. So, okay, all right. Thanks for that.
I
appreciate that. I won't hold you up any more today. I'll see if I can pick on some issues next week, and we can get the ball rolling again.
Yeah. You're my bold, brave knight. There you go. There you go.
You're lovely, Cheryl.
You lovely. Got it. You got it. You got big fans over here.
That's right.
Hey.
And they're all clapping for you.
There they go.
Hey, Brian. Thank you all once again.
Yes. Yeah. All the best to you.
Now get some rest.
Thank you.
Yes.
Get some rest, because when you feel good, you know, you feel better about things, so.
Yep.
It's important to get your rest and build back, you know, your resistance and everything. And everything is easier when you know, you have your health and you're rested.
That's right.
Mm.
That's what we want. Okay. And take your platinum microphone throughout the realm of the right perspective. Spread the good words of liberty, freedom, and justice.
Okay, if that's your wish.
Yes, that's my wish.
I'll do that for you.
Yes.
Okay.
I thank you.
Lady Cheryl.
Lady Cheryl. Okay, thank you all.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Brian.
Ta-da.
Yeah, glad he was able to get in and
say some good words. We like to hear good words.
Yeah, they sounded like he needed someone to speak with, so...
It was, I have, like, the Liberal Party is actually called the Conservative Party, and the Conservative Party is called the Liberal Party. So I don't, it's kind of strange.
Yeah, that's a mind twister.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Steve, you're still there?
Yeah, and I guess we're all hoping that Brian's feeling better.
Yeah.
And the guys who served in Vietnam with the Australian forces that were there said the Australian men were the toughest men they ever met.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and
that's their natural home, the jungle.
That's right. But what is Australia? Is what? It's an island. It's a country. It's a continent.
It's a little
place.
Bit of everything.
Right. It's geographically just about the size of the United States, even though they have maybe, I don't think they have that many people. They may have about 25 million people in that country.
I think they have more kangaroos than people.
Right. And that's why they got to be careful. They can get invaded very quickly and. You know, the demographics won't look too good.
Yeah, Bob Grant always used to threaten to move to Australia.
right.
Remember that?
Right.
He even had the address picked out.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Well, the Australian people always love the Americans, and they, you know, as far as I know, it's a great country over there. You don't want to ruin it, believe me.
Right.
And it could be ruined real quickly.
Right.
Yeah. Well.
You know, the other day I just found out that John McCain wasn't the only POW at the Vietnam War. I always thought he was the only guy there that was a POW.
Yeah, and I thought that John Kerry was the only guy that ever served in Vietnam.
Right. I'm the only guy who had a swift boat.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But as we all know, the real true heroes, you wouldn't even know about it. You find out that they did something, they were a hero, after they died, or years later, maybe someone would bring it up. They would never bring it up, the real heroes. You know, they didn't never wear that on their sleeve because they wouldn't bring it up, obviously, because they saw the guys around them who didn't come back, and they would feel guilty if they went around, you know, boisting, you know, building themselves up.
Yeah.
They saw the carnage, you know, and they didn't feel, you know, they felt proud of it.
Hunting license here?
Can I get me a hunting license here?
Yeah, that phony John Kerry. Remember that? Can I get me a hunting license here?
Right. And, you know, the same thing with Kerry. Kerry had cancer surgery just before the primaries in 2004. The media didn't bring it up. It was no big issue. They're gonna bury certain things with the Democrats. We know that. And unfortunately for conservatives, if there was people out there who were really, you know, bringing the conservative line out there and the issues and everything, you would find yourself being tremendously supported.
Well, it worked out with that Kerry. He was such a phony, such a nobody. What has he done in the intervening years to establish himself? Absolutely nothing. He is such a non-entity. Massachusetts should be ashamed of itself with the two senators that they have. There's really nobody representing Massachusetts. That's how bad it is.
And the craziest thing about it is that people up there seem to love it, you know?
And they have the craziest laws over there. They allow all the liberal stuff that goes on. Anything that's liberal, they go right for it, right straight for it, with the gay marriage, with the educational programs that they try, everything new, and their taxation situation. They are so experimental, anything new and untried. Oh, like they want to be in the forefront. I had been to Cape Cod a number of years ago. I thought Cape Cod was oh so nice. But now I don't even want to travel up to Massachusetts and be a part of that state. That's not the place for me. I always say I want to retire down south where it's nice and warm. I can't take the winters up here in the north. So that is my comment. And then I always say I want to go to Charleston. I want to go to a place where they name the dance after the town. So, and I think they have Republicans down there in South Carolina. So that's the place to head for. And you know what they say, Steve, that the number of people who are leaving New Jersey is like the biggest state loss of people that they have come across. They have come across so many that New Jersey, I think, is the number one state for people exiting the state. You can't afford to live there. The taxation is ever so high. It is just a situation that this governor turns away from. He just doesn't get it. He cannot figure out how he is supposed to govern. He is not doing the job that he was elected to do. He thinks he's going to be running for re-election. The people of New Jersey have to send him a message this year. Why wait for next year to send him a message? And the people of New Jersey have to vote out these corrupt Democrats. 11 Democrats were picked up for corruption, for stealing, about a month before November of last year. What has become of all of this? They want to raise taxes. They want to raise the tolls on the turnpike.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Cheryl. How does a guy like John Corzine, who's been in business his whole life, suddenly decide that taxes help business? How did he become successful?
This is what I
what
can't,
a
yeah,
dope. You're going to tell me dope. He doesn't know that low taxes is what encourages business and he was a successful business? Or was it all right for him to become rich, but now that he's an elitist, he wants to stifle others from reaching his plateau?
He's exploiting his power. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
And they won't be satisfied till the whole state of New Jersey is a replica of Camden.
Yeah, well, you know... New Yorkers, when they retired, they used to retire in New Jersey. But now they're skipping New Jersey and moving over to Pennsylvania because they don't tax your pension. So New Jersey is losing out on all that money that could be spent and put back into their treasury. So
I feel sorry for all those other states that are going to absorb all these ex-New Yorkers and New Jerseyans. You know? Yeah. They still keep that same mentality.
In this tri-state area, Steve and New Sky, doesn't make any difference because the whole tri-state area is lost. I mean, if a liberal moves from New Jersey to Pennsylvania, is it any different? Pennsylvania's as liberal as it comes to in so many ways. So is New York. So Connecticut is as that's totally gone too. Massachusetts, Vermont, all you got a socialist, Bernie Sanders, who's a congressman out there, and I guess the disease has spread to the people. Vermont is a lost cause. The whole Northeast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Any place that Howard Dean is from is a lost cause.
In Massachusetts, when some of those jello brains finally get fed up with the taxes, they go to the refugee camp of New Hampshire. They move to New Hampshire. And the first thing they're doing, we want the government to do this. We want that. We want that. Hey, you just left that. Why don't you just stay there? And they ruined a beautiful little state of New Hampshire that used to be a conservative state. And they come there and they demand more government this and that. And what happens? Your taxes go up.
Yeah.
That sounds like Howard Dean, all right.
All right, look, fellas, we're going to pack it in because it's getting late. And
Cinderella got it.
News guy, did you want to say something?
No, I was just enjoying the show.
No, okay. Well,
you do a great job as producer. That's why you're producer extraordinaire.
And
thank you. You're not so bad.
No. The last thing I'm going to do for the show tonight is just read this article that I wanted to read to Mike, but I didn't want to take all their time in reading this article. It's not that long, but it validates everything that we've been saying about what's going on Wall Street, with mainly being a Democrat scandal. And this is from the New York Post of Thursday, this past Thursday, the 18th. And the title is The Wrong Drugs for Wall Street. And they say here, Barack Obama and the Democrats, seeking to torpedo a surprisingly resilient John McCain, are moving to capitalize on Wall Street's continuing meltdown, blaming the crisis exclusively on 8 years of Republican policies. Back in 1999, Congress opened the door to the subprime mortgage crisis when it repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, the 66-year-old firewall between commercial banks and investment houses. Though sponsored by two Republicans and supported by the GOP majority in the Congress, it was signed into law by then-President Clinton and enthusiastically endured by both his Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin and then-Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan. New York's Democratic Senator Charles Schumer hailed passage of the bill as a, quote, historic day, unquote. And its promoters included Senator Christopher Dodd, a 2008 Democratic presidential candidate. Though designed to lift restrictions that prevented U.S. financial institutions from competing globally, the repeal also encouraged banks to make intemperate high-risk loans and to create exotic new financial products. And it was followed by the rapid growth of mortgage-backed securities, in which bonds are issued and returns paid from a pool of mortgages. This created a lot of short-term profit, thanks to more fees rolling into the banks, but it also heightened the risk, and banks' books became overloaded with these questionable securities. When more and more individuals who took loans they could not afford suddenly couldn't make their monthly payments, the mortgage holders looked to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which guaranteed the mortgages. Yet even as both agencies were feeling the strain, Democrats like Schumer were pushing over the Bush White House's objections to increase available mortgage funding and increase the size of mortgages Fannie Mae and Freddie could purchase in high-risk areas. And they did so right up until the recent government bailout. And all along, Democrats have been particularly supportive of the Community Reinvestment Act, which pushed banks into making more home loans to those low and moderate incomes and disproportionately risky credit. See, these companies were pushed into this by the government. That's what it is. All along, Democrats have been particularly supportive of the Community Reinvestment Act, which pushed banks into making more home loans to those with low and moderate incomes and disproportionately risky credit.
No,
so much for
income.
History. Yeah. The real question is, what comes next? Obama and the Democrats seem to believe that the answer is heavy re-regulation to swing the pendulum too far in the other direction. And with their populist rhetoric about greed and obscene profits, that would undoubtedly include an increase in the capital gains tax. But if anything threatens Wall Street stability, that would be it. Indeed, should Obama win, fears of a hike in the capital gains tax would likely further destabilize the market. And if you think Wall Street's been on a wild ride this week, wait until then.
Well, folks, what comes next is get ready for higher banking fees. That's what's definitely going to come out of this. That'll be part of the shakeout. And regulations. We got enough regulations. And who are they going to put in charge of the RTC? Charlie Rangel? I mean,
right, yeah.
I mean, it's all nonsense. You know what this is, really? They turned the mortgage industry into another welfare program.
Yeah,
that's basically
right.
What it is. I mean, you don't have to have people explaining it.
That's right.
And the bottom line is you're going to be paying higher banking fees when you go to the bank from now on. That's the bottom line. And this is more what I call government-fueled inflation.
Right. It's welfare state housing. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's all it is. They just turned it into another big welfare program. And Cheryl, on Babe Ruth, when he was a kid, I'm pretty sure they sent him to his parents, sent him to St. Mary's, I believe it was called the Industrial School, because I believe it was because of behavioral problems. But then again, remember, behavioral problems in the late 1800s are totally different than behavioral problems of kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We know that. But kids were sent off to reform school back then. Some kids were sent there, obviously, as orphanages.
Yeah, he was a wild kid.
He was a wild kid and everything. But just picture, I believe he finally got out of there when he was 20 years old to play baseball, you know, 1920. That must have been the equivalent of, like, releasing a lion out of a cage.
Right.
You know, the Babe.
Yes.
And, you know, the country and baseball was better off for it.
Right. You know? And the country focused on him because he was just so marvelous. He stepped up to the plate, and he hit that ball.
That's right. And the best stories with the Babe is when he goes back to the orphanages and the infirmaries, and he meets with all the little kids and everything. He was at one orphanage, and it was an infirmary where his kids were sick, they had polio, crippled. All the kids were around the Babe. True story. All the kids around him. Babe looks over to the side. He sees one kid who can't come over. He had the braces on, probably had polio or something. Babe Ruth walked right through the crowd of kids, picked the little crippled kid up, put him on the pitcher's mound, and in three pitches, that little crippled kid struck out the mighty Babe.
See? There you go.
He lived in the moment.
There you go.
Yeah, well, he was a real person.
That's right.
Yeah. The thing is, talking about this economic thing, and talking about before, you know, it really just goes back to all of this money that's been thrown around, and nobody knows where it's coming from. Nobody knows how much is really in circulation. My concern is that in like 6 months from now, you know, people start to realize, and I'm sure that more than who have realized this already, but they're going to start saying, when people start saying, okay, what is this money? Where is it coming from? How much is it really worth? The only thing that really can save us at this point is the fact that everybody is involved in it neck deep. And even then, there's going to have to be some sort of reckoning.
There has to be some sort of reckoning, is right.
Yeah, and
you know what gets me, Steve, and the news guy? Every day in a left-wing town like New York, you know, I don't even have to go to the other cities that are controlled by liberals because there's enough here, enough money that's been robbed and mishandled to fill an encyclopedia. Every day you can't buy the New York Post without opening it up, and it's in other papers too. But I read the Post. One scandal after another in every institution that's run by liberals. This is the latest one from last Tuesday, September 16th. New math. Teachers with no class soar. The number of teachers without classroom assignments at the start of the school year, but receiving full pay, jumped by more than 13% since last year, according to new data. The pool of teachers known as the absent teacher reserve, which grew from 1,220 teachers last year to 1,395 this year, has grown every year since a 2005 teachers' contract amendment gave principals more say over hiring decisions. The agreement, for the first time, gave principals the freedom not to hire teachers who had been cut from shrinking or closing schools, yet guaranteed the teachers who couldn't find new jobs their full salary to work as substitutes. So everywhere you look, money is being wasted and thrown out the window in institutions controlled by liberals. Where is Obama to talk about these liberal unions and the contracts that they got signed in liberal towns like New York, throwing millions of dollars away? No, they just want to concentrate and lie about people who were not responsible for the things that they're accusing them of. For political purposes, when you have a real crime here in New York City, day after day, with one institution after the other, like Medicaid, how many stories have we read about Medicaid being ripped off? These liberals have cost this country its treasury with their social programs and with their entitlement programs, starting with LBJ. I'll have them niggers voting Democrat for 100 years, he said, when he instituted these programs, meaning I'll give them everything they want for nothing, a taxpayer's expense, and they'll vote Democrat. And that's all it's ever been with Democrats since the dawn of time and the rise of liberalism in this country.
That's right, John. That's right. And I'll tell you something else with these teachers and the teachers' union. They can't find kids to fill the classroom because the kids drop out of school.
Yeah. Oh.
So you got to pay for the school building, you got to pay for the administrators, you got to pay for the teachers, but the kids drop out of school.
And the teachers don't speak Spanish either.
That's another problem.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing that shouldn't be our burden. You should not be allowed to come to this country unless you can first read, write, and understand English. We should not have to spend our tax dollars to teach you how to read a language that you should be learning before you come here. The burden shouldn't be on us, and we shouldn't have to struggle in our schools like this and slow the process down or have special schools and classrooms that cost us hundreds and maybe millions of dollars more because we're too lenient with the rules that we have for people coming into this country.
And not only is it so lenient, you have daycare centers now for 13- and 14-year-old girls in the New York City public schools. They're giving birth. That's a fallout from the third world invasion. And let's look at it truthfully. We're all people. We're smart, but we know the street side of it, too. How many of these people are being enrolled in these schools? I guarantee you they're not the age they're saying they are. They might say they're 12. They're really 15. They're looking to suck up the whole system. It's a big, giant... It's a daycare center. That's what it is. That's all it is. A holding ground.
Who have to get their English in order, and they have to know about the government and all of this. It's all of the illegals who all of a sudden somehow have a political voice in America. They're illegal. They're here in the country illegally. By default, they're breaking the law. There shouldn't be a discussion about this.
There's a term for that. There's a term for it. The inmates are running the asylum. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, that's by definition, and I, you know, they cover it with different things. They call it they say immigrants or labor day laborers or something like this. It's all the same thing. They are here in the country legally. By default, they are breaking the law. There should be no discussion about this. This is
Craig. Yeah, well, all right, folks, we're going to wrap it up.
All right.
I want to thank everybody for staying up late.
Yeah, I hope I didn't overstay my welcome. I, you know, was figuring on leaving.
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay, okay, I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
You brought some very good points today, so good.
Yeah, well, that thank God she was able to make it down at the last minute with just a very short notice. So we really appreciate it.
I find it so wonderful, and I'm so honored, and it's such a tremendous compliment to me to be asked to fill in for the great Frank of Queens. So Oh, you betcha. This is a big thrill for me. I enjoy every minute of it.
Well, he'll be down soon again, and I'm sure Steve is going to be with us next week along with Frank and the news guy. So it'll be round two. So, and Steve, since you brought up the great Babe Ruth before, this is for you.
That ball is high. It is far. It is gone.
There we go.
Meanwhile, it was a pop-up behind second base.
Yeah.
He's got to get new glasses.
Yeah, well, Sterling makes a lot of goofy things. Here's one on Jeter, a hit that Jeter had.
The 0-1. Line deep to right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone. But it's off the wall. Excuse me. The throw home is not in time. It's a two-run triple for Jeter. The ball came off the top of the wall and came back to Ichiro. The scoring from third, Damon, from first, Melky, on the two-run blast by Jeter off the top of the right center field wall.
Either he needs new glasses or they have to go they have to go to like a 40-second delay with him.
Yeah, 40 second.
Positively demonic.
Yeah, he's a Lulu, I'll tell you.
Wasn't he a member of the MCA All-Stars or No Stars with Bob?
Oh, yeah. Bob used to make fun of that. He used to say, we have a John Sterling who plays first base, second base, third base, shortstop, and even sells peanuts and popcorns in the stands.
Right.
Because he said he wants to be everywhere.
Right, because Sterling would play shortstop. It was a pop-up to the right field. He'd run out to right field and catch the ball in front of the right field.
Yeah. You see something else, Carl.
He was hyper, that's all.
Yeah, no. He's...
Can you believe this guy?
All right, fellas.
All right.
Listen, stay tuned for The Best of John and Frank, Volume 117. This is a funny tape, brother. Let me tell you. Frank does a lot of battles with Alan Combs on this when he used to call Alan on his show, and he really zaps it to Alan. You know, he tells him, all right, Alan, I haven't called in a couple of weeks, so people want to hear me, so why don't you go out and get a sandwich and a cup of coffee and come back in about an hour, and then you can take your show over again. I'm going to talk to the listeners. So it's a lot of good stuff. The only thing is, the sound quality on this isn't that great on the tape, so I'm going to sit by here and raise it or lower it whenever it has to for the hour or so that it plays. But when it plays during the week, when we upload it to Live 365, and it plays after tonight's live show, it'll be fixed up because I'll put it in my program here to edit it and enhance it a little bit. So it'll be a better sound quality on the archive when we put it up on Live 365. The only thing bad about Live 365, and I spoke about this with the news guy, is that on Live 365, you can't choose what you want to hear at any given time. When you bring it up, what's playing, if you want to hear like The Best of John and Frank after the show, and the show is still playing when you bring it up, you have to wait for the show to end before The Best of John and Frank comes on. You can't move it along or choose which one you want. That's the only bad thing. So eventually, maybe someday we'll be putting all of The Best of John and Frank up on the website. But in any case, they will all be available when we're finished all of these. They will be available on a DVD. We'll put them all on one or two DVDs. I was putting them on CDs each show, but it's too much because it takes up two CDs and you have to break up the file. And you know, if anybody wanted a whole set of The Best of John and Frank, all 135 volumes,
about 270 CDs.
Yeah, you would need 270 CDs. So,
yeah, that's not bad.
you know, it would be hard to get 270 CDs out to anyone, you know. What if you had four or five people that wanted a set of The Best of John and Frank? You know, now you're talking thousands of CDs, so...
Just the postage alone on that, I think, would you know, not be enough.
Imagine that.
And the tracking.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And I'm just looking for the DVD player that I had the serial number written down. It's a Sony DVD player that plays DVDs, audio tapes. Because the only bad thing about putting things on a DVD is that it's not as flexible as a CD. You can't bring it out to your car, and it won't play on a portable stereo set, but it will play on, here it is, it will play on a DVD player, and it'll play on your computer. So, I mean, you could put it in your DVD player and listen to all 135 volumes in a row. And that's they'll all be listed. And from 100 to 1 to 135, so you can pick the one out that you want. But anyway, the DVD player that plays DVDs, audios, is a Sony. And the model number is, get your pen ready, in case you want to go to Best Buy and buy this. It's an excellent DVD player. And it's a dual type. It plays DVDs and VCRs. So, and it also copies from DVDs to VCR tape, or and vice versa. So if you want to put all your, you know, your videotapes on DVDs, you can do it with this machine. It's really great. It has a lot of flexibility. The model number is RDR-VXD-655. That's Sony model RDR-VXD-655. And because there was only like two in the store out of all the ones they had there that actually played DVDs. I had to bring a DVD audio with me and put it in the machine. And when I saw the count going up, and I knew it was playing, so I knew it worked. Even if it says it plays DVDs on the outside, a lot of times it does not. So if you're testing one out, you better bring a DVD audio with you and see if it plays it. So in any case, I want to thank Cheryl. I want to thank Frank for calling in when he called in.
Oh, yes.
We miss him, and we'll see him next week.
Frank is like the Highlander. There can only be one.
He's the traveling man.
Yes.
And he deserves it. He works hard, and I'm glad he's able to get away. So I know he loves it up north, but he keeps talking about moving to a place south and west of here. So we'll see what happens. If he keeps going up there and coming back with the rave reviews of what he saw, I have a feeling he may go the other way eventually when he wants to buy his home somewhere else in the country. In any case, folks, get set now for The Best of John and Frank, Volume 117. I think about like the first five or six calls are to Alan Combs, really funny stuff. So remember, the quality is a little bit low. And then later on, we start getting into calls to Bob Grant. I'm on there a couple of calls and other talk show hosts. But you'll have a lot of fun with this tape. All right, everyone.
I want to thank everybody, and especially John. John is the greatest to be with. And
thanks.
Thank you, Frank, and good night, News Guy. Good night, Steve from Manhattan. It's been a pleasure to be with all of you tonight.
And good night, everyone, and the great Frank of Queens is bigger than Talk Radio.
All right, and Steve is making cool.
And, of course, like I just said before, you know, the Frank is like the Highlander, they can only be one.
There you go.
And Steve is making quite a reputation for himself, and the News Guy is too, slowly but surely, as the greatest producer in the business. The hardest working, I know that, I'll tell you that. All right, News Guy, good night. Good night, Steve. Good night, Cheryl. And folks, thanks for hanging in there and enjoy now The Best of John and Frank, Volume 117, and we'll see you next week. Good night, everyone. Bye.